It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, a great show for you. We'll start off with Trey Ratcliffe, who got a chance to watch the Google Loon Balloons be launched. I kid you not, this is not a joke. Also here, Russ Pitts, my old friend from Tech TV, who's going to talk about E3. Dieter Bohn from The Verge talking about mobile. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com talking about WWDC. There's lots of news. It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 410, recorded June 16th, 2013. Now with more next steps. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by SumAll. Easily connect your data from Google, Twitter, YouTube, PayPal, Amazon, Facebook, and more to gain important insights instantly. All in one beautiful interface. Start using it for free today at SumAll.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer or from your smartphone and tablet, too. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com and use the promo code TWiT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers all the tech news of the week. And we have a really unusual panel here. I'm excited because normally we try to, you know, not too many people have never been on TWiT before. And fortunately, we have a couple old timers. I'll start with Renee Ritchie's to my right. He is, of course, at iMore.com, a regular on Mac Break Weekly. Good to have you. You're still in town.
Absolutely. This is my WWDC hangover.
You just don't want to leave.
It's just too much. I can't get airborne again.
And from The Verge, and this is Dieter's first time, Dieter Bohn. It's great to have you, mobile editor at The Verge.
Yeah, good to be here.
And a friend of Renee's. I guess you guys worked together for
used
a while.
To, yeah, absolutely. Right.
That's a nice way of saying I was his old boss.
Yes.
His old
Not old,
boss.
Former.
Former. You look a lot like Ed Snowden, actually. I don't. You don't know anything about the NSA, do you?
No, not much.
Just checking. It's not just me. The chat room says the same thing. Also, an old friend, a guy I used to work with at Tech TV at the Screensavers. He was one of the funniest writers ever, a producer at the Screensavers. He's now editor at Polygon, which is Vox's new game website. Russ Pitts, great to have you.
Hey, Leo. Good to have you. Good to see you again.
Glad to see you have your special gold sword. So we just want to make sure we're all armed with Minecraft-like 8-bit instruments.
Just in case it gets rough, I wanted to have this close to hand.
How's things going at Polygon?
Very, very well, actually.
A couple of months? When did it launch officially?
Officially launched, I want to say October of last year. So okay. It's been about 7 months. This was our first E3 as a Polygon, and it all just went very, very well.
Very fun. Vox, of course, used to do, still does SB Nation, and then launched The Verge. Both of which are amazing websites, then decided to get into gaming, and Polygon is, like The Verge, really kind of the definitive gaming website. So I was really thrilled when Tom Merritt told me that you had taken a job at Polygon. That's great news. Really good.
Thank you. Thank you
Welcome.
So much, Leo.
First time on TWiT for Dieter and Russ, and we'll talk about E3 in just a bit, but we also have an old friend who's going to talk about something a little bit crazy. Well, dare I say loony. Trey Ratcliffe is here from StuckInCustoms.com, our favorite photographer. You're back from China. You got into China.
Yeah, I got into China, got back out of China. Great success there, so the visa was taken care of.
Yeah, the last time you were here, it was up in the air. You were supposed to leave the next day, and so you got to go. And you went with the NEX 7. How did you like that?
I loved it, yeah. So I did an experiment. I set my normal big Nikon D800 to the side, and I replaced it with my Sony for the about 10 days. And
not paid by Sony. He bought it at retail. It's not some special advertising deal.
I have no relationship with Sony, but, you know, I'm not one of these old-school guys that's just tied to carrying around big iron and mirrors just because it's the biggest and the best. I think that these small mirrorless cameras, this is the future of photography.
Well, and I'll tell you why I asked, because when it came time to – Henry graduated from high school last week. When it came time to get him a graduation present, I got him an NEX7.
Yeah.
I want to get him a nice camera. I want a light camera to take to college. And based on – so I didn't make a mistake because you hadn't gotten back yet. Tell me now. Is it too late?
No, it's great. You know, there's only a few conditions when you need a big DSLR where that is still better. Maybe like high-speed action type stuff or where you don't want to encounter the buffering. But really, NEX7 will take care of 99% of your needs.
Yeah, good. So welcome back to Twit. He's in New Zealand. He's in Christchurch right now. Tell us the story. You got a strange email from Google last week.
Yeah, so they sent me a note and they said, "We can't tell you what's going on, just sign." And I was like, "Well," and I knew it was Google X, so it's got to be cool. And they've only announced two Google X projects, you know, the self-driving cars and the glasses. So this must have been cool. And it was this Project Loon. And it was this audacious, ambitious idea to surround the world with internet balloons. And they wanted me to come along and take some photos and just kind of see what was going on. It happened to be here in my backyard. That's totally coincidental. So I jumped in a car with my family and drove a few hours north from Queenstown up here to the Christchurch area and joined the team and started taking photos. It was a blast.
So you actually got to document this, and I know there's already one video on stuckincustoms.com. We're not looking at that right now. This is a Google video. But you shot one video, and you have another one coming in a couple of days that is in a lot of technical detail discussing, you know, talking about what's going on here. But as soon as that video gets approved, it'll be at stuckincustoms.com. But they were smart to ask you because here you are documenting. This is the secret Google warehouse. So are these, first of all, they're in the stratosphere.
Yeah. So they're twice as high as commercial airlines and there's basically nothing up there. There's no more weather. So they get solar power cleanly. And the big breakthrough about these balloons is that they can move up and down at various levels through the stratosphere. And as they move up and down, they can catch different air currents. So they can sort of keep this grid or matrix-like mesh sort of Cartesian plane.
They're not
going around the world.
They're not attached by a 10-mile string to the Earth.
No, they've got a valve on the bottom. It's actually a two-chamber balloon. And the top chamber is filled with helium.
Okay.
The bottom one is filled with regular air. And by pumping air in and out of the bottom chamber, they can move them up and down.
Changing
and
the density of the helium a little bit. But
stays the same. But they change the weight of the balloon by pumping more air into the lower chamber.
Ah, I get it.
Yeah.
So that's something you can keep doing kind of for at least until the balloon wears out.
Yeah, so that's the big goal is to not fill up the balloon too much so that it pops or that it gets these holes in it. You know, they're really trying to figure out a way to keep the balloons up there for a long time. But they have had balloons get up there and stay, you know, for months and years. I mean, ballooning is sort of an old science. It's a tough science. So they're trying to get their balloons to stay up as long as possible.
Can you show this on my screen, Chad? This is the balloon going up. So you get a sense of it. They're doing this on New Zealand over New Zealand as an experiment. How many balloons did they launch over New Zealand?
Dozens and dozens. I don't know the exact number. They've got this company called Raven Aerostar that they partnered with. And Raven Aerostar, they're the guys that build all these huge weather balloons for NASA. They do all kinds of crazy stuff. So these guys they're super hardcore. They know what they're doing.
And how do they get the internet access to the balloon?
Well, so they have these big ground stations that are in cities or you know, in places where they definitely have a good solid wired internet connection into the backbone. And so your signal goes up from your house, you know, you have, or your car, or your little village or whatever it is. You have this little antenna that aims up at the sky.
Here's a, here's an image, by the way, of the antenna on Trey's video. It's kind of cute. It looks like a little balloon, a little red balloon.
Yeah, and actually you can see a little, if you look over there to the right, you can see a little white dot. That's one of the loon balloons that is flying
over.
It's
up here, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite tiny up in the
sky.
Yeah,
you can see it. So these are visible on a clear day. You can't kind of see the balloon.
That one is kind of still on its way up to the stratosphere.
Okay.
So they are really tough to see with the naked eye. They're pretty tiny.
Yeah, I mean, they're 10 miles away.
The signal goes up, it goes to one of the balloons, and then it gets relayed around to other balloons until it finds a ground station, goes down, gets the data, then brings it back, you know.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. And in fact, there's, as the balloons move over, there's a handoff, just like a cell network. And so it's an interesting technology. What kind of speed do people get?
Well, I went to a couple testers' homes, and we looked at it. It seemed perfectly broadbandish. I didn't jump on speedtest.net to see how fast it really was. But I remember the first time. So I was in there with – this is kind of a funny story. Maybe I shouldn't tell it. But so I went into the first tester's house, and I was there with Stephen Levy from Wired Magazine, who wrote a beautiful piece over there on Wired. By the way, one of my best photos that I took is going to show up in Wired Magazine. They got an exclusive on it, so the world hasn't seen that yet.
Oh, cool.
So, be sure to check out Stephen's article when it comes out in the in print. So anyway, what happened is we went to this tester's home, and you know, they're getting internet. They're on trademe.co.nz, which is sort of the local eBay. And then, of course, everyone in there, we want to connect and, you know, connect our cell phones or whatever and start playing with the internet. And then so Stephen Levy's over there. He's connecting to it or whatever. Then I went over and saw that, oh, people are connecting to it. I want to connect too. So I go over and I ask the Google guys. I said, what's the password I want to get on? And they said, just a minute. Mr. Levy is on the internet. I was like, all right, I'll wait till he has a good experience. And then I don't know what they thought I was going to do, you know, BitTorrent the Game of Thrones. Or
yeah,
but
one at a time only, please.
Yeah.
How funny.
Yeah.
So, they're claiming 3G speed. This is not to wire, you know, America. This is not to get cities online. This is for areas where there is no internet access.
Well, they say that there's actually quite a few Americans that don't even have good internet access.
I got a call from a guy in Montana, you know, just the other day. He says there's no internet access available to me. But these people, but if you're in the first world, you'll probably use satellite and expensive satellite internet.
I think this will be quite disruptive, the same way that fiber has been disruptive. Mm-hmm. So when fiber drops into a city, it drives competition crazy.
Right.
Suddenly people have to provide, you know, unlimited internet or drop their prices. And it's not just the access that I think is exciting. Here in New Zealand, actually, I think this is a pretty good test bed, because I noticed this after I came from the U.S. where I'm used to having unlimited internet. But people here, they don't really have unlimited internet in their homes. And I think this is actually very common in Europe and all over the world. We're quite spoiled in the U.S. And so I know that, like, at home in Queenstown, I happen to have unlimited internet. I've got to have it, so I pay extra. But all of my son's friends who are 12 and 13, they come over and they can't believe that my son can watch limited YouTube videos. I mean, it's inconceivable to them.
Right.
And can you imagine being a kid growing up, not being allowed to watch, you know, maybe 10 or 20 YouTube videos a month? I mean,
it's a big deal for us as TWIP, because it means that people in New Zealand really are going to be very careful about how much of us they watch. You know, if you want to be an internet broadcaster, bandwidth caps are a bad thing.
Yeah, it sucks to make a decision like, well, do I have enough bandwidth to download Leo's show this month? You know, it's a horrible decision you have to make.
So does Google, have they said they plan to offer this for free worldwide? What are they probably don't know what they plan to do with it, or do they?
Yeah, they don't really have a business model for it yet. I'm sure, I don't know what the business model is for fiber. You know, I don't think they provide that for free.
They've always said that their goal as a company is to get people to use the internet more. If people use the internet more, they'll make money, because they're an internet advertising company.
Yeah, they just want to get more people on the net.
Right.
And I don't think they want to be a giant ISP and make money from, like, monthly charges.
Right.
They just want to get people internet, and then they do AdWords and this sort of thing.
Right.
That's how they make money.
It seems like they have a business model. I mean, I don't know if it's enough to pay for the infrastructure. Who knows how much these balloons cost? But the model is pretty straightforward. The more people that use the internet, the more the world is connected. It's good for the world, but it's also good for Google. And this is why, you know, no nation's going to do this because they're floating all around the world. The UN isn't going to do this. I think it's going to be a company like the Google or the NSA. They might do it. That's a joke. Maybe not such a big joke. So this is cool. So if you live in New Zealand, you can if you go to google.com/loon, as they call it appropriately, the Loon Project, you can sign up as a tester. What do you think? I mean, this is pretty cool, Trey.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean,
it seems on the face of it goofy.
Well, you know, this Rich Duvall is kind of one of the guys behind this. It's a huge team, of course.
Right.
But he and Mike Cassidy, they know it's an audacious plan, and they're serious. They don't want to waste their time. They want to do something that's going to work and change the world and affect a billion-plus people.
Wow.
You know, these are all makers. You know, they're all like kind of Burning Man kind of guys. They love building stuff. And they, you know, they're having a ball. They're doing some serious science, and they're really iterating in a Google way. So they're, I think they've got the right approach and the right attitude. And I mean, everyone's super excited about
That's
it, especially
neat.
New Zealand. Sometimes we feel like the end of the world down
there.
So it's exciting to get stuff to launch here.
I thought that was why you moved there. You want to be at the end of the world. So the idea, and we'll see what happens, but the idea is there's 5 billion people on the planet who are not connected to the internet right now. The vast majority, the idea is to connect as many of them as possible with hundreds, perhaps thousands of balloons floating at 60,000 feet above sea level, getting their internet access from base stations in big cities and passing along. And because it's so high, you could be in a valley. You could be really in a very remote area. Be surrounded by mountains and still be able to get internet access.
Yeah. No, selfishly, I just want to put one of these little friendly red things on my truck.
Yeah.
Because I'm driving around to these remote areas of New Zealand to take photos where there's no cell phone coverage, so I have zero internet. The idea that I could just have the internet floating above me all the time, it's intoxicating.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And I see you're wearing your glass. You wear it all the time?
Not in the shower.
Good.
Yeah, that's the
good
that's the
thinking
line that I draw.
Yes.
No, I do wear it. Actually, I find myself pulling out my cell phone very rarely.
Wow.
It's really
no more of that emasculating, girly looking at your phone stuff. You're going to wear those macho blue glasses.
Yeah, I can pull them off.
Hey, Trey, always good to talk to you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Watch Trey's site, stuckincustoms.com, because in the next day or so, there'll be a more technical description. From behind the scenes, I guess lots of whiteboard chalk talks and so forth about how this whole thing is supposed to work.
Yep, we'll get it up there.
Thanks, Trey.
Yes, sir. All right, bye,
great
guys.
Great to talk to you again. Take care. Trey Ratcliffe, stuckincustoms.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, E3 on the docket. Of course, WWDC. I have a little package from Apple here we might open. And whatever else is in the news, I guess we could talk about the NSA. There seems to be more revelations, even more revelations about the NSA spying, which seemed to confirm Steve Gibson's hypothesis on Wednesday. He says he figured it out. He figured out what prison it was all about. And I have to say, I've seen no evidence to counter what he says is going on, and it's a little chilling. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Right now, our show brought to you, a little break, our show brought to you by our friends at Audible.com. Yet another reason to have unlimited internet so you can download great audio books everywhere. Father's Day. I forgot to say Happy Father's Day to Trey. Happy Father's Day. There's a Audible section to send Dad on a listening adventure. This would be a great Father's Day gift. To sign Dad up for a bookstore with over 100,000 audiobooks. Does Dad spend time in the car commuting, at the gym working out, washing dishes? There's all sorts of reasons why I listen to Audible. Lots of times I want to listen or I want to read a book, but I can't hold a book, so I listen. And I love it. When I go to bed at night now, I listen to Audible. Whenever I'm in the car, whenever I'm doing anything, I've got Audible going throughout the house. I love it. The Audible apps that run on your smartphone, your iPhone, your Android device, your Windows phone, Windows 8. My Sonos has Audible. Let me listen to all sorts of titles. I'm a big Audible fan. We're going to give you a free Audible account right now. If you go to audible.com twit.com/twit2. You go sign up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month, or two credits a month. It's basically two books. Your first month's free. You can get your first two books. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. Pay nothing. Those books are yours to keep. How about this? I think it'd be time to re-listen to 1984. They've got a new edition of 1984. That's book number one. What about that? You can choose. I just listened to The Great Gatsby because I saw the movie and I thought, is this like the book? It was a great rendition by Jake Gyllenhaal. Is it Gyllenhaal or is it Jiff? How do you pronounce it? All sorts of great stuff. Julian Assange has a new book called Cypherpunks, Freedom and the Future of the Internet. Here's the problem, choosing two great books. You've got to pick two. Your first two are free, though. Audible.com. How about this? All the Rave, The Rise and Fall of Sean Fanning's Napster. That's got to be interesting to listen to. The best readers bring these books to life. Audible.com/twit2 for your first two books. Absolutely free. Now that Game of Thrones is over, you probably got some little extra time to listen. Audiobooks are great. I know you'll love them. But the best way to find out if they're right for you is to get those books for free. Audible.com/twit2. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. I don't want to talk about NSA right now. We'll save that for... Let's talk about something fun. E3. Russ Pitts is here from Polygon. Your first E3 as a Polygon editor...
That's our first E3 as a full-fledged site. We were there last year. We were publishing our content on The Verge, ramping up to launching our full site late last year. But this year was our first E3 as the as a dedicated site, as our own big editorial team. It was pretty exciting. It was probably the most exciting E3, I think. I've been covering games for about 7 years, maybe 8 years. A lot of the editors have been covering games for a little bit longer than that. Most exciting E3 I think any of us have seen. This is a really big transformative time in games right now.
Yeah, primarily because of the new Xbox One and the PS4. Both Microsoft and Sony had press conferences where they talked more about the games than about the TV viewing. Still that controversy kind of even more flamed about used games on Xbox One. Sony put out that funny viral video in which the tutorial on how to share games with the PlayStation 4, which basically involved, here, have a game. we also got the prices, $499 for the Xbox One, not a surprise. Paul Theriot said that's how much it was going to cost for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. $399, $100 less for the PlayStation 4. That's also not a surprise since it's a comparable device. You take off Kinect, mm-hmm. which is about $100. That makes sense. Is that $100 difference going to make a difference to buyers come Christmas, or is the used game issue a big issue, or is it just a tempest in a teapot?
I don't think it's a tempest in a teapot. I think the jury is really still out on what will make a difference this holiday season. There's still a long way to go, and that's what Microsoft is telling us. It's a long road to launch, and the fact is they're still being very cagey on exactly what the details will be for their used game policy. They made some inflammatory suggestions. I think a lot of their hard policies will be subject to change. But to be honest, Sony's announcements they were received very well at E3. There was a standing ovation on the floor of their press conference when they announced this, which is practically unheard of. That just doesn't happen. But I don't, what they announced was essentially, yeah, you can buy a game, you can buy a hard copy of a game, you can give it to somebody else, we won't charge you for that, we're not going to restrict that. The console is not going to have to check in with the mothership every 24 hours via the internet like the Xbox One has been announced to have to do. But then they snuck in a little something about having to pay for a PlayStation Plus to play multiplayer games online, which was something they hadn't talked about previously and they hadn't done previously. And then they also announced that game publishers will be able to set their own policies about how and when or if you will be charged for playing online or playing a used game or trading a game. So really, their policy isn't entirely too much different from what Microsoft has.
Yeah, Microsoft's saying that the publishers get to choose what the used game policy is on their games, even on the Xbox One. And that's what right. Sony's saying. They're just saying it from different directions.
That's right.
If EA decides none of our games are going to be resellable, it'll be the same on both platforms.
And they could also decide that you may be able to buy a game, buy a hard copy of a game in a retail store, in which case Sony has announced, you know, they won't charge you to play that game. But EA could then say they will charge you for an online pass
right.
to play that hard copy online, or, you know, once you download it onto the hard drive of the PS4, which some have suggested all games will need to be downloaded to the hard drive. And once you do that, it's no longer a physical copy, and then the rules can change.
Right. And in fact, these things last for 10 years. It's pretty predictable that in the next few years, games on disc are going away, right? Or not?
I think so. I think there will always be a market for games that people want to grab. There will always be a market for things that you can play without an internet connection. But as far as, you know, the consoles are sort of the bleeding edge for the core gamers who aren't playing on the PC. And that bleeding edge will always use the latest and greatest technology. I think one of the reasons we haven't seen too much, you know, the C3 was very exciting because we got a lot of news about a lot of games that are coming out. And they all seem very advanced and very exciting. Games like Destiny and Titanfall are doing really exciting things, merging multiplayer gaming with single-player gaming and creating interesting experiences. We haven't been getting the details for those games until recently because they were tied directly to what the consoles were doing,
right.
The technology built into the consoles, which has just been announced. So I think, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, people don't want to people say they don't want to be always online, but then they use their always online connected devices to complain about that. you know, they say they don't want to, you know, they want to be able to take their console to grandma's cabin when they go on vacation, but who really does that? So, you know, a lot of the experiences that are coming out in terms of the games that people play, which at the end of the day, you know, both Microsoft and PlayStation have made a lot of noise about being full living room integrated devices with you know, downloadable movies, integration with Netflix and various other services. But at the end of the day, games sell consoles. And the games that are going to drive people to buy these consoles are the games that are going to provide the most interesting, innovative experiences. And that is leading towards the internet. So, you know, I think there's going to be an initial outcry. I think once the policies sort themselves out in the next few months, they're going to look very similar. I think at the end of the day, people will buy these consoles, whether they're online or not, and that outrage will go away quickly.
Although you gotta kind of laugh at Microsoft's kind of fumbling this whole story. People like Don Matrick of Microsoft, who said, "Well, don't worry, just buy an Xbox 360 if you can't get online."
It's like it's literally. Yeah.
Come on, Don.
You know, you get the sense, looking at Microsoft, that everyone who had any idea how to talk to the public somehow went away. Like they've really done a very poor job of enunciating their policies in a way that make them seem palatable. In fact, there was a report, I think it was in the Military Times earlier this weekend, saying that Microsoft has single-handedly alienated, this is a quote, Microsoft has single-handedly alienated the entire U.S. military.
Because they're not online.
Because you will require an online connection to play the Xbox One, because the Kinect, which has a camera and a microphone, must always also be online. So theoretically, this thing could be listening in on classified.
They'll never allow that on military bases. Yeah.
It wouldn't get anywhere near a military base. And these guys, you know, and I've heard people say that, you know, military bases, even some forward operating bases, do have internet connections, and that's fine and fantastic, but you can't rely on that, obviously, in a combat zone. You know, so these guys get a lot of joy and relaxation from playing their devices, and when you put, you know, restrictions on those that make it difficult for them or even impossible or illegal for them to use it, then you're asking for trouble.
I hadn't even thought of that. Well, I think one of the things people, pundits, were saying is, well, you know, as much as you hear the hardcore console gamers talk, they're not who drives the sales here. Is that true?
It's not true now. It certainly hasn't been true for the last 8 years, the current console generation. Those consoles were sold first and foremost to
it's gaming.
Gaming. I think you'll see more and more people who aren't a part of the core crowd buying these devices. You know, I think that the Xbox One has a lot of really cool integrated features for people who enjoy watching sports on television, who play fantasy football.
Yeah, that looks cool.
Yeah, it looks really great. So I think they're trying to open those consoles up. I mean, Microsoft has said since day one with the original Xbox, they wanted it to be a Trojan horse. They wanted it to be a living room device more than a game device. And slowly, they have been building it into something that could be reasonably called that. And I think the Xbox One really is. It's an all-in-one solution for practically everything you would want to do from your couch, and that's fine. But Man, they need to first sell this to the core gamers because that's who their evangelists.
And PS4 has no living room use. I mean, it is a gaming box and nothing more. Or, you know, it's funny because I bought the PS3, a lot of it because it had Blu-ray on it. It was
I got
gaming for free. It was a cheap Blu-ray player.
It was one of the cheapest Blu-ray players. Yeah. A very good one too.
Yeah.
The PS4 actually will have a lot of the same offerings that the Xbox One will have. You'll be able to watch your movies. You know, the PlayStation 4, the PlayStation 3's viewing capabilities and movie downloads has been roughly equivalent to the Xbox 360's, and I think you can expect the PlayStation 4 will also have a similarly robust living room solution. You have to buy the camera extra if you want it to spy on you in your private moments. I don't think a lot of people will do that though.
Yeah, in fact, Netflix said the number one device for watching Netflix is a PS3. In fact, you have to pay money to watch Netflix on an Xbox. Are they going to change that?
I don't see how they would. I don't expect that to happen. You'll still need the Xbox subscription.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Xbox Gold. Yeah.
That sucks.
But you'll need the PlayStation Plus just to play multiplayer games. And up till now, we haven't heard anything from Microsoft that they will charge just to play multiplayer games, although I imagine they will consider PlayStation's announcement to be permission to do that.
So as expensive as these are, both are going to require a monthly fee to really be used as people want to use them.
That's right.
Who's the winner?
Oh, man. You know, you just from the point of view of who's getting their message out and who's generating the most public goodwill, you have to say Sony is the winner right now. I mean, that standing O on the show over the press conference, that was the game for them, at least at E3. Still a long road to launch, and like I said, I think most of the policies wind up being fairly similar at the end of the day. But right now, Sony's got the goodwill on their side.
Hmm. And what about Nintendo? Is it over for Nintendo? Are they going back to being a card company?
Well, that's the same question a lot of people were asking at E3. What about Nintendo?
Yeah.
They decided not to have a physical presence at the show this year. They did a Nintendo Direct from their headquarters in Japan very early on Tuesday.
That's a big deal. Not going to E3.
That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
And that's, you know, a lot of people think that that's an admission they didn't really have a lot to talk about. Although they did announce some exciting games that got a lot of people excited about the Wii U for the first time since it was announced. So I don't know about Nintendo. You know, people want to count them out because I think they are definitely ceding a certain part of the game to Microsoft and Sony. I don't think they see themselves as directly competing with those two companies. But, you know, they're still competing in terms of there being only so many hours in a day. And, right. You know, in the same way that indies compete with the larger game companies, you know, they're all looking for the same eyeballs and the same amount of time and the same attention from people. So I guess their goal is to try and do that a different way. That they're leaning on their core franchises very hard, and I guess their hope is that people will want to play Mario enough that that they will buy that Wii U and buy that new Mario game. But
is anybody buying the Wii U? Is that do we know how well that's doing?
I don't know off the top of my head how well it's doing, but it's really there's not a lot of excitement about it.
Boy, this Super Mario World 3D though, this looks good.
It does look awesome, doesn't it? And that's the thing about Nintendo, man.
But you're right. There's going to be – it's a nostalgia play for a lot of people. And then kids will love it, right?
Yeah. I mean, at least – you know, I talked to a lot of indie game developers at E3, and people like to say there's really nobody doing platform gaming, which is that style of right. Mario game. Nobody doing platform gaming right now except for the indies and Nintendo. And people right. obviously like that style of game, and they like those characters. You would just – you know, I think a lot of us who are hardcore games fans, we've just wanted to see more from Nintendo. It's been such a beloved company. You know, a lot of people grew up with the NES and those characters. You just want to see them competing a little bit more strongly. So a device like the Wii U, it's kind of confusing. It's like Fisher-Price, my first tablet. You know, it's limited in a lot of ways. It doesn't feel cutting edge. And the availability of the games is very limited. So.
I guess when you see a title like Mario Kart 8. You just feel like maybe they've kind of run out of new ideas or something. I don't know.
Yeah, people like it.
But let's now, okay, so that's the big three or the big two and a half. Ouya had kind of a presence on the show floor as well.
Ouya was actually just off. They were outside. They rented a parking lot. They called it it was a park of some sort. It's basically a parking lot with a tent and a bunch of games. They were
okay. I stand corrected. Ouya had a presence in the parking lot.
They had a presence in the parking lot, and they were there. It's the little game console that could, and there have been some Ouya competitors announced. Lots of people trying to put forth a cheap console solution, tapping into the Android market. It's an interesting thing. I think it definitely makes a statement about where these innovations in gaming can come from. You have a lot of indies. Indie development driving that console, and obviously it's relatively inexpensive. It's not very hard to get your game in that marketplace, and if you buy that console, you can play lots and lots and lots of games very easily and cheaply. It's honestly, I don't think it's very well done. I don't think it's a very solid solution. I think it has a long way to go before it's going to be a competitor to the Xbox.
You know where our reviewer Jeff Needles liked it was as an XBMC. Tool. You can put XBMC on it, and then it's a $99 gaming machine plus, media center.
The original Xbox.
It's a cheap media center. Yeah, it's like the original Xbox. Yeah. So that may be a market. Let's quickly run through games that we'll let you go. I know your wife wants to celebrate her birthday. Call of Duty Ghosts, Infinity Ward back. Look good. Is there a dog?
There's a dog. it's all everybody's talking about.
I don't know why. Dog. Okay, good.
Yeah, it's got a camera on it you can control. I actually got my hands on that one behind.
There's a camera on the dog. Can you fight the dog? Can you fight with the dog? Can you be the dog?
You can be the dog. They really wanted to downplay the fighting of the dog because apparently the dogs, the actual dogs that serve with the special forces in combat don't, they're not used as weapons. So they wanted to play that down a little bit. Okay. But they also had to kind of juggle the fact that people play games and have certain expectations, whether they're realistic or not. So you do have the option to deploy the dog in certain ways. But for the most part, it's more of a snooping tool.
Really. I want to release the hound.
You can be the dog.
I'm excited. There's a couple of games that I'm looking forward to, and of course I'm not a hardcore gamer, so I'm probably the wrong guy. But what is that open world where you can hack almost anything?
Watch Dogs.
Watch Dogs looks really cool. And that now that's not an exclusive. Is Call of Duty an exclusive? Does anybody have an exclusive? On Call
there
of Duty?
Weren't a lot of exclusives announced this year,
and that's a big differentiator, isn't it? That what. Probably in the long run is going to make the person make a gamer decide Xbox or PlayStation.
I feel like why everybody's focusing on this used game issue because we can't argue about which exclusive we want. So
and the hardware is so simple, similar.
All X86.
It's all X86. Yeah. I mean, admittedly, maybe the PlayStation 4 has on paper better specs, but I don't know if that's going to make a difference. There isn't a lot of differentiation. So you're focusing on these license issues, these rights issues.
Yeah, traditionally people have decided on one console or another based on the exclusive. Your Halo gamers, we'll choose your Xbox. People who like Resistance.
Well, there is Destiny, which is the new one, very Halo-like, it looked like, from Bungie.
Sure, same team. Plans to be a multi-part series. They say they're planning for an eight-year life cycle for this game franchise. Big project from the makers of
you like it?
Halo. I do like it. Yeah, I do like it a lot. I think they are. I think the trick, though, I mean, they do what they do. They do it very well. I think the trick with that game is going to be how well it delivers on some of the next gen promises they've made in terms of the connectivity and some of the merging of the single player with the multiplayer gameplay and how well all that works. Because there's no shortage of shooters. There's no shortage of games. This game is gonna sink or swim based on some of those promises. But I like it a lot. I think it looks really good. It's very exciting. One of the coolest aspects of it is the ability to sort of seamlessly match make. You can go from playing a single-player game to having friends drop in and help you out and have a co-op experience, and that happens more or less seamlessly, and they can drop in and out at any time. And then you'll enter these public areas where all of a sudden you're playing an instance where anyone playing the same game in roughly the same area of the world can join in, and you can all team up against enemies or to accomplish various other things. They're being a little cagey about the details, but I think they wanted to get out this idea that the game morphs from single player to co-op to multiplayer.
Right.
And all of the technology, all the matchmaking is happening behind the scenes. So there's no loading screen. There's no lobby. It just happens, right?
It looks a little bit like Halo. There's no Master Chief in it.
No, there's no Master Chief.
There's a guy who looks just like Russ Pitts in it, apparently. this is Russ's video from Polygon.
Yeah, they tell me they wanted to give the player all of the choice. They didn't want to nail the player down to being a specific character that they created. They wanted you to be able to build your own character and make the choices of how he looked and how he played. And I also get the sense that there was a feeling that the Master Chief character had kind of overwhelmed that franchise. I think they want to allow the writers and the creators to have more freedom to do different things.
Okay, that's fair. Any breakouts that you were surprised to see? Anything you should we want to warn us about? Rise took 7 years to make.
And man, if it isn't a big question mark whether or not that matters.
Yeah, well, nobody who's playing it cares.
Yeah, nobody's playing it cares. It had a long life cycle. It went through a lot of different phases. It was originally supposed to be a Kinect game of sorts, and then they pulled it back, and they made it more Kinect again, and then they pulled it back again. So I think it was I misspoke. I think it was originally not supposed to be a Kinect, and then it was Kinect. It went back and forth. What it looks like now is a weird kind of hybrid between a Kinect game and something else. I think a lot of people are calling it a Kinect on Xbox One technology demo. I think it looks very, very pretty. I mean, the Crytek, they're the team behind Far Cry and Crysis, which has been known to make computers cry. So I think, you know, it's going to be very, very pretty. Whether or not it's interesting, whether or not it's fun to play, these are still open questions. Right now, it looks like a very fancy technology demo with a lot of quick time events where, you know, you press a button when it tells you to press a button. And
oh, that would be really boring. That would be sad.
It would be sad. But just when you see a game, though, when you see a console game that's been in development for 7 years, it's hard to think that something good is going to come out of that.
The Kinect connection looks pretty cool. I mean, you throw things, you kick, you know, you're actually kind of fighting in there. It'd be kind of fun if there really were something where you could do that.
Yeah, and what, you know, we talked to developers right now, and with the Kinect being built into the Xbox One,
they got to develop for it.
They got to develop for it. What we're hearing now is that they're going to start integrating more or less simple things that enhance the experience. Like imagine in a Splinter Cell game, for example, and this is not something that I know that they're doing, but imagine, for example, if you could touch your temple and activate your night vision, right? Or shake your head or do gestures like the soldiers do, like hand gestures to each other, you know, like stop or I see an enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, little things like that they can layer onto the core experience of playing a game with a controller that I think would make a big difference.
It's bloody. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Lots of neck stabbing. You know, neck stabbing is still a big thing in games.
Very popular.
It was a big deal last year. Yeah. Very popular this year. Like in the Call of Duty Ghost demo, there's a part where you're scaling the outside of a building like Batman. You know, you're scaling down the outside of a building, and there's a dude on a window washing platform about 9 floors down. You can press a button and leap down and stab him in the neck, and it's pretty exciting.
Great.
All of the next stabbing you could ever want. Yeah.
Give me one breakout surprise. Anything that people hadn't heard about that you thought is exciting or worth paying attention to?
You know, one of the coolest things I saw was Ninja Gaiden Z. It's Ninja Gaiden is
with zombies.
There may or may not be zombies, but the funny thing about it is that's a really hard game. People enjoy it because it's hard and. Uh-huh. A ninja theme. This one takes it in a little bit different direction. They basically hired the one of the creators of the Spec Ops game, Spec Ops: The Line, which is a critically acclaimed game about the horrors of war. But they hired this guy, and they basically said, "Have fun with it. Take the franchise in whatever direction you want." And he did. And it's kind of silly and over the top, and definitely not a traditional entry in that franchise. So I think if you're looking for something a little light and fun and exciting and deep, that'll be a good one for a lot of folks.
Anything from Blizzard?
Yeah, I didn't see anything around.
That's so weird. They're just taking the year off, maybe. They just, you know, they deserve some time off.
Well, they had their Project Titan, which was supposed to be their next big thing, but they recently just pulled that back into the kitchen. They sent it back to the kitchen, decided they weren't going in the right direction with it and needed to completely retool.
When you see 7 years to do Rise and you hear stories like that, you really realize this stuff has gotten harder and harder and more expensive and more. It feels like it's almost at the limit of what these game companies can do.
Well, you get we're getting into a place now where you're requiring 200 and 300 person teams and
$10
to $100 million to create these games, yeah. And you're seeing them still being sort of beat or matched by small, you know, 10 to 50 person teams and making indie games. I think a lot of the really exciting, ambitious stuff is happening in indie right now. And these AAA teams,
yeah,
they're really scratching their heads. They're really trying to figure out what their extra, you know, hundreds of people and extra millions of dollars is actually getting them. In a lot of cases, it's nothing. So,
right.
I think we're at a point in the industry where, you know, we really needed this E3 with the new technology and to be able to say that you have these large, expensive teams working with this new exciting technology to do outstanding things. But at the end of the day, it's a very scary time to make an expensive game.
It's a bad sign when they're making remakes of Castle Wolfenstein.
I think it's a great sign.
That's what we really want.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Russ, it's been so great having you on. I really appreciate it. We're going to let you go. Russ Pitts, who is editor at Polygon, polygon.com, very in-depth coverage with a lot of gameplay video from E3. If you want to know what happened, what the big games were, this is the place to go. The console wars and so forth. And I'm sure, as the console wars develop, we'll talk to you again. Maybe this Christmas time, you can help me decide. Actually, I pre-ordered the Xbox One.
I'm getting all.
Well, you get the day one edition with the engraved controller.
Yeah,
that'll be nice.
Because then I can invite people over and. You know, it's a great way to get chicks.
You know, I was the first. I ordered this on the first day.
Come look at my Xbox.
I have a special controller. Did you steal my stapler?
All right. Thank you, Russ.
Thank you later. No, thanks for having me on.
Man. You're going to get both. Of course, we're going to get both. But that's a lot of money to sink.
I have this theory
stuff.
That, and I should have brought this up earlier, but that mobile is still eating away at the consoles.
Oh, it totally is.
Like WWDC, Apple's now the last platform where you can come in, stick your phone on a table, grab a Bluetooth controller, AirPlay it, or HDMI to your TV, and just start playing games.
And that's what'll happen is people will be doing this a lot.
Absolutely. Well, I take photographs.
If you're Microsoft, you're smart because Kinect is something unique and different that can maybe bring that out. And they had that, and I meant to ask Russ about this. They didn't show the Illumu Room technology, but I love that demo.
Yeah,
I wanted to see more of that.
And Microsoft is also smart because they're not being precious with smart glass. They're putting it on every platform, so they'll be able to do some of that tablet integration.
To be honest, that's why I got the Xbox One, because I'm more interested in the TV integration, the smart glass, second screen stuff. I like the NFL with the stats on the side. I think for me that, you know, the games, I'm going to play, it's, you know,
play a
I'm
few playing, times.
Yeah. So it makes more sense to have a console that can do more.
Which I'll get all of them.
And in that case, Microsoft has won the perception racket because, as Russ pointed out, they're really pretty much identical in terms of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if I'll ever use – I don't know if I want Skype on my TV at any point. I'd much rather not have people disturb my television. But I do like the idea that they're presenting it almost like a living room
computer.
It's
integrated. Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be. We'll see. I'm concerned about how well it's going to integrate with my cable box. Will it actually be able to control it? You know. Not the IR repeater.
It won't work at all in Canada, so I'm not worried about that.
I know what the best home theater PC will be. I've seen the future. It is the Mac Pro. It's going to look so nice.
Not overkill at all.
No, it's going to look so nice next to my big screen TV.
It can finally make iTunes work, you know, at a
iTunes will work great. It'll be silent. It's going to be, this is the future. And only 5,000. Well, we don't know what the money is. We'll talk about WWDC next. You're watching This Week in Tech. Thanks to Trey Ratcliffe and to Russ Pitts for joining us. Sticking around, Dieter Bohn from The Verge, our good friend Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Lots more to talk about. But first, let's take a break and talk about one of our sponsors with a unique product. It's free. Free. Like, it's just free. And really the trick on this, and I think one of the reasons they're making it free, is because it is hard to talk about what it does. If you've ever, if you're in a big business where you know about big business intelligence, you probably have this idea that, you know, in big business, they have big data, they have huge data sets that they can parse, they can go through, they can predict the future. It's really changed the way business is done in the U.S., wouldn't it be cool to have that kind of business intelligence for you, for your podcast, for your small business, for your store? Well, SumAll is bringing that exact idea down to earth free right now. SumAll.com. We've been using it at Twit, and it really is incredibly useful for us. We can tie in all the services we use. So Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram. They just added Amazon. Actually, that's been there a while. MailChimp, AdSense, SendGrid, Basecamp, Bitly, WordPress, Constant Contact. They've got Amazon, PayPal. What are they? They're getting through the API. They're getting information from all of these services and then giving you a beautiful dashboard that shows you things like, well, we're interested, for instance, when we plug our T-shirt on the show, does it increase T-shirt sales? When we do it on Twitter, what's the relationship between that, the show, and T-shirt? All of this stuff is a really impressive example of big data that you can put to work for yourself right now. So with SumAll, you go to one place, you can see what's happening across your business. Whatever business you're in, I think you're going to be very interested in this. And it is free. They've added an export and spreadsheet view. You could put projections into email. In fact, they're adding features all the time, a dozen new features. SumAll just passed a half trillion social impressions tracked. They're sucking all of that data in. They've grown 30% in the last few weeks. I think people are starting to learn about SumAll. I hope you're learning about SumAll, and I hope you'll give it a try right now. Go to SumAll.com, click Try SumAll, create an account, and I got to say, it is free. It's not freemium. You will see some pricing. I think there's still some pricing on the website. That's just maybe some idea of what it might cost someday. But for right now, you don't even give them a credit card. It's just, I don't even know how they're paying for this ad. It's free, and it's great. And I just think that actually it's a good friend, Anthony Castellana, who was, I'm sorry, not Anthony Castellana, Dane, who was at the start of Squarespace. And he's just, I think he just believes in this, and he just figures, we'll figure it out. We'll make it happen. Are you a YouTube channel? Chad, you should be using this. Get
Absolutely.
Your YouTube metrics together with your social media campaigns to see what works. Wouldn't you like to know when it's best to tweet about a new video? To correlate Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram to your YouTube video views,
right.
You can do all of that.
And you can, yeah, the best part about it is that all of those services are plugged in. I don't use just one service. I might have analytics on something, but not everything. And so it's really nice that everything can be plugged into SumAll.
I was going to log in and show you, but I don't know if it's sanitized. There's stuff in there we might not want to show people. Yeah. So normally
I can show you this graph.
There you go. Wouldn't you like to know how that happened?
There you go.
That's what we don't want to show you. Right. So that's when we introduced nudity on the channel.
Right.
Yeah.
You can see the
hockey
jump.
Stick.
The jump.
Jump. Amazing. They do not resell your data. Your data is secure. The data is private. It is a great service. And all I can say is try it. SumAll, SumAll.com. We should. Dane, all the best, because I think he's really doing great. No, there will be no nudity on this show. That's my promise to you.
I was looking forward.
Stay fully clothed at all times.
Bit of a bait and switch.
Though. I make no promises.
I got a bag. I got a couple of things from Apple.
Oh, hello there.
Look at this. So WWDC was on Monday. Yep. Renee, you were there. Dieter, did you go?
I was not there. No,
you did not.
I was in the city, but not.
You
in the
building. You looked across the bay and saw all the people flocking. In Moscone, there is the what do you think that is? If I didn't show you a logo,
2010.
Yeah, or it could be a freezer thing. It's got an apple at the top and an apple at the bottom, and on the back, this is the new Airport Extreme with 802.11 AC.
Yep.
Why did I buy this? No one knows. Because I could.
You can't wait for AD.
because that's going to be the future.
Why
in about
is it
3 months?
Tower?
This is obsolete. They say because of the antennas, but what's interesting in here, iFixit did a teardown. I should show the teardown because there's like a big gap in the middle where you put your hard drive.
Right. Yeah.
So it's this would be the same unit as the
time capsule
unit, but they put a hard drive in it.
Yeah.
What I wasn't clear about, it didn't look like there was a SATA connector. Is there a way I can connect the hard drive in there? Or do I have to buy it from
Apple?
You might
have to buy it.
There wasn't
sealed.
A SATA connector on there. Yeah. But they didn't know if it would be easy to solder one on. Last
time, maybe
checked.
That's the thing to do.
Yeah,
yeah. No SATA connector, but how are you with the soldering iron? How do you feel with the soldering? And then I was really pleased because that came today, and then I was really pleased to see this. Also, we sent somebody over to the Apple Store, and we're very excited about what we got here. This is you know, this is something a lot of us professional users have been waiting for. The new Mac Pro is here. And look at that. You see the cooling? It goes right to the top and comes down right through the bottom.
Got the logo.
Actually, this is, I may have to make this up. This is not. It's a bunch of gaffer's tape. But I had to make it up because what I think you don't get right away with the pictures of the Mac Pro is its dimensions. This is roughly true to dimensions.
That's the scale.
It's
that's
almost a scale. It's about this much off. It's about half an inch off. So that is pretty amazing.
It is. They had some on display outside the main hall where they did the keynote, and it is mind-numbingly small compared to the old generation tank of a Mac Pro.
And inside here, you're going to have, and it's not clear exactly which Xeon, whether it would be a Haswell or an older Ivy Bridge Xeon, you're going to have soldered in SSD drives running on the PCI 3 bus, right?
Absolutely.
You're going to have sticks of RAM. The only upgradable piece would be to take out the old RAM and put in very expensive higher density RAM. Yep. And two video cards also soldered onto the motherboard.
Yeah. It is not upgradable. It is changeable.
It is what it is. Yeah. That's why I call it the world's most expensive home theater PC.
I mean, that's what they've been doing. They did the MacBook Air like that. Everyone freaked out when the unibody MacBooks went to no battery, and then the MacBook Air was like that, and then the iMac was like that.
Right, but the difference is that this is a professional-grade computer, not a consumer-grade.
Zero upgradeability.
New professional-grade.
Right. So it's upgradable via the Thunderbolt, right?
But you have this beautiful design, and then you have all these things hanging off
which is terrible.
Is it 6x4 or 6x6, 36?
36. Yeah.
You know, I thought when Phil Schiller said, can't innovate my ass.
Yes.
After he showed this, he said, can't innovate my ass. I thought that actually showed some sensitivity to all of the articles saying, you know, Apple's over. It can't innovate anymore. And if he's putting this forward as what Apple sees as great innovation, the future, they can't innovate.
Well, I mean,
this is a failure.
Well, hang on. I wouldn't say it's a failure. People are going to we'll see
nobody's
what happens
gonna
when it goes
buy
to sell.
First of all, we got to see. I mean, if it's $1,500 bucks, maybe it's $4,000 if it's a penny. And the market for this is completely wrong. What a pro wanted was a new cheese grater with a new Xeon chip in it and a Thunderbolt port. So that's what the pro wanted. They don't look at this. It's under their desk.
Do you think Apple cares about making money off of that? It's like a halo product. It's like, oh, we can see what they can do.
It's like Chrysler's Lamborghini.
The problem with Can't Innovate My Ass is, Neil, I put up an article on The Verge, is that nobody was questioning their ability to make an awesome computer, right? Yeah, of course.
They can make wild-looking computers, is like the best of us. Yeah. This, to me, reminds me, everybody mentioned the Cube.
Yes. Or Darth Vader's helmet.
Or Darth Vader. So the Cube came out when? What year was the Cube? 2000? It was under John Sculley. It was not a Jobs product.
I think
was
Jobs, it a Jobs did the product? Keynote. Yeah, he did the introduction.
Okay.
About how beautiful and soundless it was.
Yeah, and cracked.
Yes.
2000.
Plastic is hard, Leo.
Well, that's why this is extruded aluminum.
But this is, I mean, this is a very specific product. It's not for the guy who wants the 8 drive bays, because that's the Dell. You can go to Dell and outfit a computer with 8 drive bays. Our photographer and videographer took one look at this and saw if he could fit it in his backpack to take with him from hotel to hotel as he does his photo jaunts.
Oh, that's an interesting use. Of course, it doesn't have enough storage to make it really worthwhile. You're going to have to buy a $2,000 very heavy RAID array, Thunderbolt 2 RAID array.
Or just throw everything in the cloud, Leo. That's all free now anyway.
I think this is a beautiful product. I will buy one because I'm an idiot. But I don't think this is what the pros wanted at all.
Well, they showed Pixar. They had a lunch with Pixar, and Pixar was showing what they're doing with them. So I think it's just an incredibly narrow. It's not what all pros wanted. It's an incredibly narrowed product, again, like their other. It's prosumer more. It's like it's the Final Cut Pro of Mac Pros. Final Cut Pro X.
If you've got enough money to spend, it'll make a great home theater PC.
It'll look fantastic.
It'll look great
on, the shelf.
On your living room shelf.
If I were a pro, I would be concerned about the GPUs. I mean, if you want to use to crunch video, fine. But I mean, it seems like, you know, soldered on non-upgradable GPUs.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, it's AMD, not NVIDIA.
Yeah. No option to choose.
And they're 3D oriented, not gaming oriented.
Right.
I think this is a beautiful product with no market at all, and it really makes me, it frankly makes me call into question Apple's ability to see their market.
Or it's Apple's willingness to shape their market. Like, they want to be, like, they got rid of the X-Serve, and people were wondering, they let the Mac Pro flounder.
They did not replace the X-Serve.
No, you got a Mac Mini with running OS X server.
If this is rack mountable, I don't know what your racks look like.
No, this is like almost like the Matrix, where you have the cells of little computers on a table.
Yeah, they got this. If I'm a pro, I think the real risk is that a lot of professional users are either, they've got two choices now, Hackintosh or Windows.
This is not Alex Lindsay's Mac Pro.
Well, I'd love to know. We haven't been able to get Alex Lindsay to ask him about it. And you know Alex, he'll buy five of them.
Yes.
He buys everything. But I think in the long run, I think this is a big mistake. And if pros, and I know pros have been very concerned about Apple. I wonder what their response is to this. Is this what they were looking for?
OS X and OS X Server Mavericks has some really interesting stuff for server-side computing. Everything from Xcode pushing out apps to how it handles data in general. And running it on this will be interesting because it's not that big server farm machine.
Right. They don't have one.
No. Nope.
Mac Mini is what
they don't make RAIDs anymore. They don't do any of that stuff.
I mean, let's be honest. When's the last time that a Mac Pro has had an appreciable difference on Apple's bottom line?
No, I understand, but I think there's a larger issue of reputation. Remember that most of the people who work at Apple are pro users.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are they going to use? They're going to use this.
Well, they're going to use this. The old one was like an Escalade. I think I used this before on MacBreak. You threw all your junk in the back, and it was giant and roomy, and your whole family there. And this is more like that Lamborghini, the top line of the car that, there's no room for kids anymore, but it goes really, really fast.
And then you need to tow your motorhome behind it because all your peripherals plug in.
It's not going to go very far.
And I've seen pros very concerned because Apple's forcing a move to OpenCL, and there's no CUDA support because there's no NVIDIA. In here, a lot of pros want to use CUDA, feel that OpenCL is not as mature as it ought to be.
Absolutely, but it also means that Apple can go back and forth on video cards without having to worry about supporting one vendor
another. So do you think they'll do an NVIDIA version of this?
They have. I mean, they've gone from generation to generation switching cards before. Right.
Is not upgradable. So, no. you're if you're buying this, you're buying AMD.
And then you're handing it off to the next guy and you're buying the new one.
Right, or ATI, I should say. The thermal core is great. I love it.
And this is also a way to attempt technology that's going to filter down to the rest of their products, which is not something unprecedented. I mean, the MacBook Air, the first one was horribly flawed, but eventually it led to the one Dieter's using that's fantastic. And those technologies permeated the MacBook Pro and all their other technology.
All right, so they announced the new MacBook Airs as well, two of them, an 11-inch and a 13-inch using the new Haswell. That's pretty much the difference. Mm-hmm. It's using the fourth-generation Intel processor, which gives them...
microphone.
Pardon me?
Second microphone.
And the Array mics that the Retina made famous.
Right.
Which I've never really noticed. Okay. I thought interesting that they claim battery life on the 11-inch of 9 hours and 12 hours on the 13.
Under Mountain Lion. Not even under Mavericks yet, but under Mountain Lion.
Are you sure about that? Yeah. It's definitely.
That was the ones that are selling today.
Yeah, that's the one I bought. I'll get one tomorrow. I was disappointed because I was really hoping for a new Retina MacBook.
Yeah.
Maybe a thinner 13-inch.
I don't care. All I care about is battery life.
Peter said, I'm taking it.
I'm getting the 13. I'm super excited about the battery life. This thing maybe gets me 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's 2 years old. I think that the Retina MacBook now, I think the performance still isn't where it ought to be. Yeah. Right? So why would I want that here? I want just make it last forever. Once you get Retina hashed out, then you can bring it down to here. But, 12-hour battery life, if I can realistically, they say 12, if I can realistically get 8, I'll be on cloud 9.
And with Mavericks, they're saying they're getting more than that, which is nice because it has all that special power nap features and...
App nap, they call it now.
Yeah, app nap and the
coagulation. No, it's not. The coalescing.
The coalescing, yeah. Which is not—it's not a developer feature. It's not a front-facing user feature,
it's a huge feature.
Absolutely, it's something that just works in the background.
Which Apple pioneered with PowerNap, and I'm curious what's new in the new coalescing features. But this does, and this is what Haswell supposedly supports in hardware as well. It's a big issue in all mobile devices, and I guess on a portable like a laptop too. Which is that I know on these Android phones they're waking up all the time, even when the screen's off and. That just kills your battery life. First thing I do on an Android phone now is disable Facebook because Facebook will call home every 5 minutes.
And that's what they announced for iOS too, is that they're going to intelligently do all the multitasking. And it was very interesting because they could have pissed off a lot of developers by saying, we're taking over multitasking. Right. Don't you worry about it. But they said, developers love server-side smart. So we're going to wait. We're going to see. If you have a good signal, we'll do stuff. If something is waking the GPS and other people want it, and they're doing the same thing with OS X as they're doing with iOS, and that is just putting everything into the smallest profile they possibly can.
Great, it's a great opportunity, and it's the way it should be. And Microsoft's been doing this, too, with Windows 8. They've been playing catch-up, and they now have that event coalescing feature in Windows 8. And it's hardware support, too. Mavericks, what do you think of the name? How do you like that?
I, drives me crazy that it's plural. Like, come on.
It's more than one Maverick.
I guess. I get that it fits the beach, but just pick a singular.
Pick a singular beach.
Right.
Pick Malibu.
There you go.
Yeah. Except that was a car.
Well.
What? So they're going to go to... actually, there were a few good lines, and Craig Federighi got most of them off. Yeah. He was the star of this.
So much improved.
It was great.
Yeah, really fun. Looked good, was wearing a royal blue shirt, which I thought was interesting.
Got his hair supply line off.
Officially, nobody at Apple can tuck their shirts in anymore.
Yeah, they're all doing... This is the new look. No more turtlenecks. Yeah. We're all wearing untucked shirts.
Right.
By the way, just want to show you my shirt tails and Dieter, too.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know... We're such fashion
hipsters.
We just knew that was the future.
People are going to say we're in the bag for Apple. Okay, yeah, tuck our shirts in.
I wish we could afford a better shirt.
We don't tuck in. There they go. There's Tim Cook. There's Craig. Untucked shirts. But I do like the royal blue. I think that's nice.
And from last year to this year, I mean, he was so much improved.
Like Joan Rivers on the red carpet. Yeah. You're wearing royal blue. That's fabulous.
Dolce Gabbana.
But he did. No, I was going to get it. I forgot what his good line was. He did get a couple of good lines off.
Well,
one is he said, "We're not going to delay OS 10 because we've run out of big cats."
Yeah.
And this was, we were all wondering what the hell they're going to name it.
And then he said it was going to be called Sea Lion.
Yeah.
That was funny, too.
That was good.
And I really liked the developers who applauded.
Well, they were all tweeting the day before because they saw the picture of the wave with the 10. And they're like, oh, what are they going to call it? Sea Lion? And then he played right into that.
Yeah.
That actually was very funny. Mavericks, it looks like they're going to name it after California place names.
Yeah.
Maybe beaches. We don't know.
Well, it's going to be place names because people have already talked about.
Well, their whole thing now is designed in California.
Right.
They got that really good feel-good video about being in California.
Right.
So they're really, like, that's their response to... I don't know. It's sort of like patriotism, I guess.
To China factories, to tax.
It's still made in China.
Except for the Mac Pro. Yeah.
We're going to make a dozen of those a week in
everyone
in
that
Texas.
Leo buys, we're going to make in Texas.
Yeah. All of Leo's Mac Pros will be made in Texas. Assembled, not
assembled,
made.
Sorry.
Assembled in Texas.
Productized.
But I guess California is a good name again.
Yosemite, Big Sur. I mean, Mavericks. There's a whole bunch of good stuff.
Yeah, Yosemite would be good, Big Sur. But Mavericks. Do you think that they were kind of playing on the idea that we're mavericks? Here's to the crazy ones.
It's got so many Sarah Palin jokes.
We're just crazy.
It's a Top Gun, you know, Need for Speed, Mavericks.
We're wild. Yeah.
Mm. OS 10.10 Gooseman.
The funny thing is I should be really excited about Mavericks. I'm excited about the improved battery life.
There's nothing new.
Multiple monitor support.
The improved notification stuff. But
we're in a mature era. You're saying there's nothing exciting.
They unstitched
the
leather.
Well, there's some stuff. Like a tabbed finder and tags. It's so interesting that on iOS, they're like, don't pay attention to file system. And on the Mac, they're like, well, we're going to throw more features at you that apply to it. And some of them, like tags, everybody got really excited about tags. And I was really confused because they had them before. They
it's
were called just
called labels.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing. There's more of them. Now there's more of them.
You're not limited to them.
And what I was actually kind of happy was that the iOSification didn't progress further. I was a little worried that we were going to look more and more like iOS.
Well, it couldn't.
It did a little with the idea of putting apps to sleep more aggressively when they're in the background.
That's right.
A little bit iOS-esque.
That's right. Yeah. But it should be transparent to you. And I think every desktop's doing this now. I think Windows is doing it. They did add apps. They have finally iBooks is on the Mac, which is great. Maps is an app on the Mac.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, that's the way it should be. I don't know. In fact, it's funny.
Well,
until they did it, I was like, oh, you,
it
they
was
don't do
rumored
that
people didn't want iBooks on the Mac for a while.
Oh, the publishers did.
No, some people on Apple didn't want it on the Mac for a while.
Why not?
Because it's not a reading device.
You read on the iPad.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit.
Now it's a whole new Apple, Leo.
Pure.
So why can they get iWork to be amazing in a web browser, but they can't get Apple Maps? Why does that have to be an app instead of a website?
I think that with Maps, they should get like one thing as right as they can before they move on.
Let's not push it.
I'm in no hurry for them to push Maps further.
iCloud Keychain. This is a product that's going to Sherlock 1Password and
it'll take the bottom. It'll take like the majority. Like iRadio, it'll take the majority of users, but not the high end users.
Isn't this yet another feature that they kind of had before? Mm-hmm.
They did. They just surfaced it better.
Yeah,
because you could always do Keychain would store the passwords encrypted. They would generate passwords if you knew how to get to it, which wasn't obvious.
It'll do credit cards now as well. And it does it in the browser.
Yep. So it'll automatically fill in passwords and credit card numbers.
Again, this is from my mom. Like, my mom would never use 1Password. Right. She'd never use Pandora, but she'll use iRadio. Sure. She'll use Keychain.
And it does go to iOS. So if you're an Apple Apple house, you'll be comfortable with this. It won't
use
go
one platform and one browser. Right. You are fine.
They fixed multiple displays, which were very broken.
Yeah.
If you go full screen on Mountain Lion... The second,
goes off.
Second
linen.
Display is just linen.
It's linen.
How nice.
And they couldn't, they had to because they got rid of the linen, so there'd be nothing there now. So they had to fix multiple displays.
Flat linen. So now it's actually going to have, in fact, you can even have a menu bar on all your on your monitors.
And the dock can come up on all. And I don't know how you guys work, but most of us have one computer and two, at least two cinema displays.
Right.
And they were almost useless for full screen apps before. And now, I mean, everyone is just drooling over that.
And I love this idea. If you use AirPlay, one of your screens can be your big screen TV.
Yeah, I am super pumped for that. My office is set up. I got my laptop, my monitor, and then we've got like a TV that's got, there for like playing an Xbox, or I've got an Apple TV hooked up to it. And I'm just throwing TweetDeck on that full screen.
Yeah,
I was just thinking my whole
life. It's like a social feed or a dashboard.
I'm looking forward to
it. Put some all on it or something, and then that way it's always going. In fact, there's a great app that they... was it Panic who made that dashboard app?
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be great on that.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they knew. What is the name of that?
I have status board.
Status board.
Yeah.
Little pricey. It's like $20. But the idea is you can put modules in for any kind of information. Imagine putting your status board on your big screen TV and you're sitting there. Or I'm watching Game of Thrones and I can finally figure out what the bleep is going on.
Which character it is.
Who is that?
Character 2,447.
Why are they...
More importantly, why are you spending time learning who that character is? Because they're going to die in the next episode.
No, I guess we can say now because it's over.
Yeah.
Let's see. Notifications.
You get actual notifications on OS X, but not on iOS. So disappointing.
Notifications you can respond to?
So you can do what's something the story here? Is it just apps that have iOS and then they get mirrored to the Mac? Or like websites can send you notifications?
Yeah, websites through Safari.
So it's kind of like Chrome notifications?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can respond. You can tweet back.
Absolutely. And I want that so badly on iOS.
No.
No, can't have it.
No, can't have
Banned
it.
Banned 1 year.
No. Sorry. You're out of luck. You're not even going to another event.
No. Nope.
Now, you said that behind the scenes there's some OS X server stuff.
Yep.
Some really cool stuff if you're a programmer.
Absolutely.
The developer tools allow you to work in a team, kind of agile development. All of that's pretty cool.
And I'm not sure what is NDA'd and what is not NDA'd, but the stuff that they were showing off was really, really compelling.
Neat.
Yeah.
Neat.
Do we know what they're charging for the upgrade? We don't know yet.
No.
No. It better be $20.
It could be, or free or whatever.
Might as well be free.
The only thing that I wish they do is they take it out of the Mac App Store so that developers with real apps don't have to compete with Mountain Lion or Mavericks in the bestseller list.
You know who took their app out of the App Store, I was told today?
Was that?
Adobe Lightroom.
Oh. Really?
Well, they were going to face a real problem because they have a new version of Lightroom coming out. And there's no way to do this in the App Store. I'm not sure. Confirm if this is true, but I saw somebody in the chat room
mention
this.
Final Cut Pro is going to have that problem, too, when they update it for Mavericks.
What do you do? There's no upgrade path.
Yes, yeah.
So if you're at Lightroom and you've got a major upgrade, you either just give it away to a... Which is why, by the way, Adobe, I bought Lightroom in the App Store, so they're going to close that off for me. Or you have to charge them a full price as if it's
a
whole new
app. Yep.
So is Apple willfully trying to change the way the market works by not offering this? Like, I can't imagine they didn't think of this use case, but it seems so obvious that it's not just going to happen overnight, and that people need to get paid upgrades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me, Renee. I'm at a loss.
It's commoditized software. I mean, they're pushing prices so low that they believe the value will be in charging for a second app or not, not charging for updates and providing value some other way. I would love to have paid upgrades. I think the developers need it. I want developers to make as much money as possible so I get the best apps possible.
I love Apple. I've had Apple Macs since 1984. Every year I paid $2,500 at Macy's for the very first Macintosh. In the first 100 days, and I've had Macs ever since, I feel like it is absolutely clear Apple's going down the same road they went when Jobs left the first time. They're falling apart. And it's things like that. It's Steve would have figured it all out and had a plan and a path. It's like they're throwing crap against the wall at this point. And I just feel like they have.
It could be the opposite because a lot of these could be Steve Jobs' legacies that they have to get past.
But they can't figure it out.
Well, he was like app adverse and he was maybe, app upgrade averse.
Maybe it's Steve's neurotic paranoia and just being manifest.
But this WWC was clearly not Steve Jobs' WWC. And that's what gives me a lot of hope is that they were.
Maybe they'll transcend.
Absolutely.
And then there's iOS 7.
You got a seatbelt?
Holy moly. I was warned. Gruber warned me in his podcast the night before. He said, some people are not going to like OS 7.
Yeah.
It seems to me all Apple did was focus on a really ugly color palette, but you could debate that. That's a matter of taste. And not really do much at all to improve OS.
What they did, I think the unfortunate color palette has like kind of taken all the attention away from the stuff that they did do. And what they kind of did is the interface is actually completely different. They got game developers to come in and build a physics engine, a particle engine.
Really?
They turned the entire operating system into an object that you can now manipulate in 3D
that's
space.
Cool.
It's mapped around cylinders. It's mapped
Why
around
Why didn't they
cubes.
Talk about that?
And the fact that I think that this was such an early beta, like this was probably the earliest iOS beta we ever gotten. It's right. not complete. They didn't have time to get an iPad version done.
It's very wonky. It's a lot of people are reporting things. There's apps that don't even work.
There are apps that aren't finished. Like there are, if you have it and it's under NDA, but if developers have it, there are apps on there that just are not done yet. Completely
right.
not done yet. But you can see that the bones are there. And I'm much more confident in them fixing the palettes and rendering the icons and finishing the apps than I would be if the 3D engine and particle effects and the new interactions were broken. Because that would be very hard to fix.
So you're okay. We talked about yes. this yesterday with the new interactions. And my big thing is like I'm trying to figure out the layers of what lives on top and what lives on the bottom. You know, wallpapers on the bottom, control centers on top. Mm-hmm. That all makes sense? Do you think that people aren't going to be freaked out?
I think they still have their grid, right? Like the first iPhone was built by a bunch of OpenGL people just so they could have fast animation and smooth transitions, and it birthed the gaming industry on iOS by happenstance. And this new one, they rolled a bunch of the stuff they built for the interface into new gaming code. You can get a lot of the gaming stuff for free now, and I like that they're continuing to gamify iOS. There's apps in there that I don't think they've shown off yet that are literally like playing games. The entire thing is enjoyable and delightful in a visceral way that iOS wasn't before. And they could fail, absolutely could fail at realizing it by the time they launch, but they still have, you know, 3 or 4 months to clean it up and make it coherent enough that it works.
Marco Arment, the creator of Instapaper, said, iOS, quote, iOS 7 is full of APIs I wish I had years ago. Could have saved me months and enabled otherwise impractical features. Of course, Marco's probably never going to write another program again, having cashed out with Tumblr.
No, he's on the beach.
I don't think he'll be writing anymore. But that's encouraging from a number one top Apple developer. He says, this is good.
The developers to almost every single developer I spoke to is incredibly enthused about it. The designers were angry as hell, but the developers were really happy.
Good.
So, but the designers are angry as hell,
yes.
right? And I cannot disagree with them.
It's,
I mean, looking
but
at this,
ugly.
It's so
yes,
bad.
It's like a kid's operating system.
Well, and there are things that are like if you look at Control Center, you've got little circle toggles at the top, and then squares, I guess, at the bottom. Some of them launch apps, but some of them actually are toggles. So.
Yeah, but I'm glad we have a flashlight toggle because God knows that was the most important thing that
Craig
possibly...
Hockenberry was making too much money on his flashlight app. And they had to...
Oh, the palette's hideous.
Notifications,
nothing.
Yeah,
nothing was
still...
fixed, including the ridiculously small little touch target X that you have to clear the notifications with that you can never hit.
But they are supposedly smarter. Like, they will recognize cross-device notifications.
That's good.
Better.
So if I cancel notifications on the desktop, I don't
theoretically.
Have to see
it. Oh, so that's a solution to fixing Notification Center and hitting that X is just go back to your desktop.
And they're right. not interactive either. You cannot, unlike the desktop, you can't interact with them.
No. Well, my feeling is, again, like last year, Maps took up so much time and space that they didn't have time to do a lot of other stuff. They did do tons of API stuff, like collection views last year. Yeah. This year, this whole interface, I mean, they started this 8 months ago when Scott Forstall left, and they've been sprinting to near exhaustion to get this done, and they didn't finish on time.
Right.
And this is not a beta. Like, people think beta like Google or beta like, oh, it's a sneak preview of what they're going to release in the fall. This is a very hot beta. It's going to change and change.
Some say even the release of any version of iOS is a beta, or OS 10 is a beta. And, you know, Alex Lindsay says never install the first version of iOS or OS 10. Wait for 0.1 because that's the beta.
Well, this is different in that it's a lot more solid than previous betas, but it's just not finished. Like, there are literally apps on here that have not been done.
Okay, but if you go to the iOS webpage on the Apple Store, I mean, they have images. They say, see it in action.
But they're
this
not showing everything.
Like.
So I would recommend you look at the stuff that's missing from here and you get an idea of what's not done.
Do you genuinely believe that they're going to go in and radically change the look and feel of the icons in this color palette? Because if so...
No, this is how it's going
to
look.
Yeah, if they're going to change it, then we all need to, you know, hunt down some crows and bring them over to Apple so that they can eat them, because they've got this on their website, big, giant,
I agree with
unveil.
You. I agree with you absolutely. And again, there's a thing I heard back at Macworld was that it was going to make a lot of fans of rich texture design cry. Right. And it absolutely did that. But that is something that's fixable. This Apple seems like the previous Apple seems like once, you know, Steve Jobs made a decision, this icon has to be bluer. That's the icon it was, even if they were much better icons. This Apple can change. And I think that they put this out and they're listening. And like you look at the photos icon, it's a done icon. Right. You look at some of the other icons, they look like wireframes to me still.
I'll tell you why they can't. Because they have just told every app developer in the world, fix your app, make it this palette, make it look like this. And they're working really hard because current apps look crappy in this new iOS. And so if I'm an app guy, I'm immediately changing my design. And if then Apple in 3 months says, oh, well, yeah, never mind.
Well, a lot of developers...
That's going to be really a mess.
A lot of developers' initial action was, screw you. I'm not changing my design at all. I'm not doing this.
No, they have to.
But the reaction... Like, one of the key principles of this design, like, one is clarity, and I don't think they've achieved that. The other is deference. And they actually want to get out of the way of your content, but they want to get out of the way of your apps. They said, like, if you want to make a green felt app, please do. We'll get out of your way, and it'll be the best-looking green felt app you've ever seen. So they don't necessarily want anyone to look at the way that they look.
There is no felt. That's one good thing.
Not
no
Apple
more stitched leather. No Apple felt. No stitched leather. No more Steve Jobs G3 in
you
the
find my
iOS.
Friends. Yeah.
So there are some things. We'll talk a little bit more about this, and we'll talk a little more about the NSA because we know more now about what the NSA's spying is up to in just a bit. Dieter Bones here from The Verge, our mobile guy, iPhone guy.
iPhone and Android. Everything else. I mean, I got a BlackBerry at home, too.
What's your daily driver, though? What's the phone that you... Where do you have your girlfriend's number? Where's that?
I've got it everywhere. No, right now it's the one. It's HTC One.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. That's a nice phone.
Yeah.
If the battery life... But I figured it out.
So have I.
What's your secret?
Well, I have two solutions.
You
solution
have two
number
phones.
One, I've got a Mophie.
Oh, okay. I have the Mophie, too. Yeah.
I've given up on the Sense ROM. I'm trying a bunch of different ROMs. They seem to be doing better.
Yeah, I have... I tried Trick Droid, and now this is... the other one. There is also a Snapdragon battery minder that I've always been afraid of these things, like the task managers and stuff.
Yeah, they
Android.
Always screw it up usually.
But this one is pretty good because it's all those wake locks. So this is from Qualcomm. It's called Snapdragon Battery Guru. Doubles the life.
I'm going to check that out.
You tell it things like, don't wake up. Stop waking up.
Yeah, I've tried other wake lock tools and they're all too complicated.
Tough.
I bet that'll
this
be
This one's easier. Automatic. It watches you for 3 days.
What do we call it?
It's called Snapdragon Battery Manager.
All right.
There you go. There's a little tip for you.
Chatroom's making fun of me. I actually have an iPhone. I have a Nexus 4. I have a BlackBerry 10. I still have a Palm Pre Plus.
He uses them all. Nobody's making fun of you. If you have a Palm Pre, you'll like multitasking in the new iOS.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Holy cow.
WebOS is the most successful, non-successful operating system in history.
Well, somebody wrote an article saying Microsoft won. When they introduced Swiss flat design, everybody mocked them. And now everybody's doing it.
It's a different... I mean, Microsoft had to do that to get performance out of a system that couldn't render mask or composite on the fly. And they made a brilliant design language out of it. Apple went more flat, but they're also doing it in a...
Have you been following the Windows Phone Twitter account? They've just been insufferable.
We won.
Yeah.
Victory is ours. Well, yeah, sell some phones, then you can say that.
And Metro is also a much more oppressive design language, I think, than what Apple's going for.
Yeah.
I'm a little hopeful about what you talked about with the underlying APIs, the particle engine, things like that. That means that you can do more with this. And maybe if it comes... Things like the idea of the parallax in the desktop.
The multitasking is fantastic now.
All right. And battery life should benefit, too. This could be an amazing phone.
And I want to be clear, because some people will say that, I'm telling people not to complain. I want people to complain as loudly as possible so that Apple feels compelled to improve the visual design of this before its release.
So the thing I'm most excited, just real quick, most excited about is multitasking. Apps are going to be able to wake up in the background and update without me having to open it. So I'll finally be able to have a Twitter app that doesn't feel like it's 45 minutes behind while it loads.
Always.
Super excited about that.
I will echo Mike in the chat room who says, if Apple's listening, it looks like the Easter Bunny took a jelly bean crap on my on my iPhone.
Let the visual designers get in there, please.
Google Lisa Frank.
Yeah, Lisa Frank. There you go. You must have little kids.
No. Just I remember.
Or you are a little kid.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You remember Lisa Frank. Hey, before we talk about Stamps.com, our sponsor, I want to show you a little bit of what you might have missed this week if you missed a minute on Twit.
Previously on Twit, Security Now. As far as I know, Leo, this podcast is the first disclosure of what the NSA's PRISM program is, that it is a tap, an optical fiber tap on these companies.
This Week in Google.
If I ever not listen to Waze, I'm in trouble. If I listen to Waze, I've found all kinds of new routes.
Oh, I love it.
I've been driving the same route for 20 years. Yeah. Just 2 days ago, I found an entirely new route.
The Social Hour.
I tweet about shows, apps, episodes.
Of course.
Yes. When do I tweet? All day long, y'all.
Windows Weekly.
When you buy an Apple device, you bring it out in the world, people see it. That's half the point of having an Apple device, is so people can see that you have it. This little black trash can thing sits behind your computer in your office where no one's ever going to see it. You would have to be insufferably self-centered and go out and show people pictures of it. You'd have to.
Can I show you my computer?
Like, what kind of a loser could do that? Like, this is a device from another age. I cannot believe they made this thing.
Twit. Test drive one today.
How do you like my little trash can thing? I've been carrying it around all day.
Yeah, it's a Mac Pro. Congratulations.
Speaking of the Easter Bunny crapping, this could... Well, never mind.
Looks like a fez.
That's a big Easter Bunny.
You could wear it like a hat, Leo.
A very nice air-cooled hat. Paul was very funny on that. We will talk about what Steve Gibson, I think, did deduce, and I think accurately, about the NSA's spying program. In fact, there's some more revelations today that confirm what he said on Security Now earlier this week. That's coming up in a little bit. But first, a word from Stamps.com. If you are in a business, you know that a lot of time is wasted. A lot of money is wasted dealing with the post office. Time driving there, parking, getting in there. And if you're buying a postage meter, you know, I didn't know this. Postage meter ink can be as much as 100 times more expensive than inkjet ink, which is already too expensive. Stamps.com eliminates the postage meter, lets you print your own U.S. postage from your computer, your printer. Use a laser printer. It's cheaper. And it prints right on the envelopes if you want, with not just the stamp, the indicia for the stamp, but your company logo, the return address. It could pull addresses out of your computer's address book, your QuickBooks. If you sell on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, PayPal, pull it right from there. It does so much more than just licking and putting a stamp on an envelope or a package. It'll help you choose the right class of mail as well. Stamps.com is postage on demand 24/7 whenever your business needs it. If you do a lot of mailing in business, this is so much better. You'll save up to 80% over a postage meter. You never have to go to the post office again. Actually, the post office comes to you. They love Stamps.com. They'll pick up any package. You schedule a free pickup. You can do things you can do with Stamps.com you can't do at the post office. Stamps.com is always open. Import addresses from your address book. You can use cost codes in Stamps.com to track postage spending by a specific customer or a specific department. Automatic address verification because you're online, right? It even offers discounts you don't get at the post office. Discounts on package insurance, too, in just one click. No more handwriting forms. It'll print out your certified mail, your return receipt, your international customs form automatically. I might just go on and on. Plus, that great USB scale.
I got mine here.
This is worth carrying around. That is a sweet little piece of brushed aluminum. That thing, you plug that into the computer, and Stamps.com knows exactly how much postage. Here's the deal. Go to Stamps.com, Stamps.com right now. You'll see an $80 special offer on the front page with $25 in free postage. Forget it. Click the microphone. Enter our offer code TWIT, and that $80 bonus turns into a $110 bonus, $55 in free postage at stamps.com. I want you to take advantage of this right now. Visit stamps.com, click the microphone, enter the offer code TWIT. You'll get free postage. You'll get the postage, the scale. You just pay shipping and handling on that. It's around $5. You'll get a supply kit and a month's free stamps.com. That is a great deal. Now, if you're just mailing your Christmas card list, you don't need Stamps.com. But if your business is doing mailing of any kind, be a postage pro. Use Stamps.com. We thank them for their support of Twit. I'm glad that you agree with me, Dieter, that the iOS is ugly. Because, at first I looked at it and I thought, maybe it's me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
The story I've been telling everybody is when the Eiffel Tower first went up, everybody in Paris hated it.
Right.
They thought it was a monstrosity. And then it became, simple.
Now it's gorgeous. Right. Now we love it.
So, but this isn't the Eiffel Tower.
I don't disagree with you, Leo. I just have hope that they'll fix it.
And maybe they will. Apple's not notorious for doing that.
No.
Can you think of an example?
Well, I mean, they tweaked iOS 5 and iOS 4. They did tweaks like lock screen notifications and things changed,
right,
and the textures behind things changed as the betas came out. But again, this is not the old previous Apple, which is what's giving me more hope.
There are some wins here. And as I said on our coverage of WWDC, Apple did three things here. It played catch-up in a lot of respects, notifications in the control center. That's Android catch-up. It copied, in some cases. The notification center looks a lot like Android.
Everything's a remix.
And there is innovation here as well. So they did all three, and probably in roughly equal measure. Photos is great. Nobody could do this but Apple. The new photo gallery has thumbnails, little tiny ones, of your whole year. Like iPhoto, they're now organizing by the metadata, so it could be date, time. Now, Android's galleries, in fact, the HTC One's gallery.
And everything is so spatially aware. When you zoom in and zoom out, it keeps your eye where it's supposed to be, so you never lose track of where you are in space. So,
this is an advantage Apple has.
Yes.
The question is this design, and we could get into really nerdy stuff about font weights and whatnot, is the design like in an uncanny valley where like it's almost great, but then it falls into this weird space, and if they just tweak around the edges and fix a color palette, it's going to be amazing? Or is it just kind of going to be in no matter how much tweaking around the edges they do?
I want to point something out. So
Chad, who is a young person,
I'm waving
with
over here,
vividly red hair.
I'm
just
freaking out over
that.
Here.
So you take this with, you know,
I want to say no, it is not an uncanny valley. If you look at the screenshots, let's just focus on gradients of blue. You have three different types. The weather goes from dark blue to light blue, but then the App Store goes from light blue to dark blue. The videos go from a teal to a darker blue.
Right,
also,
well, that's what I'm saying, is if they fix that inconsistency.
Game Center. It's like...
Game Center, like everything is flat, except for Game Center, which is shiny.
It's like... Yeah. In fact, we do know that there were two different design teams working on this, right?
This is a photo from Dribbble of someone who redesigned it.
I like
it has more white space... Yeah. Gradients are consistent.
Yeah.
And also, look at the App Store icon or the iTunes Store icon. You have the weirdest looking musical note you've ever seen, but in the redesigned one, it's an actual music note, which you would expect to see on an icon.
And what is the new settings icon? Is that a stove burner? Is that what that is? Is that for cooking?
It's a gear you'd have on a watch or something.
It's the worst bicycle gear ever.
It's terrible.
It needs Apple's visual design team to spend a lot of time fixing it.
But this is why I'm asking if we're in the uncanny valley, is if they fix all these little details.
Maybe it's just a little bit, you're saying.
It'll pop us right back out, and it'll be amazing.
I don't like the palette either. I mean, I think it's too... young as an old person.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's not good. I mean, sometimes they have yellow on white and sometimes there's no contrast. I mean, there's a lot of basic tenets of visual design that they did not follow for this.
But I do have to point out that one of the reasons you change design is to make the old design look old and to sell new phones.
Yep.
If you don't have, and I think we're rapidly entering that era where there's not a lot new to do, you have to make some differentiation. When Detroit got in that situation with cars, they put fins on them. Doesn't do anything, but it makes the old car, the old finless car, look old-fashioned.
Absolutely.
So this could just be fins.
I just want the fins to look a little nicer.
They aren't the nicest fins. No. But neither, you know, some of those fins...
They're wire mesh fins at this point.
Yeah, but maybe that's it. You know, I'll give you that, and I hope you're right. I do think radio is great. They only gave it a few minutes.
Yep.
But Apple apparently did make the deals with the records companies, as we had presumed they would. It's part of iTunes, desktop Mac, desktop Windows, and iOS. You've got curated playlists. You've got automatically generated Pandora-style playlists.
And again, it's not for us. We're all using something already. It's for everyone who was not using anything and will use it now because it's built
in. I think they'll love it.
Yeah.
I think, normal people.
My mom will love it.
Yeah. People who are not Spotify or Mog or RDO or...
Songza, whatever.
Songza or users will say, oh, this is great. Now, it's U.S. only right now, but that's not Apple's fault.
No.
That's the record industry's
fault. It's really
fault.
Painful.
Yeah, this is another tumble log. Johnny Ives redesigns things. He takes all these normal, you know, designs we're familiar with, like the Mercedes logo. There, that's good. Plants vs. Zombies.
Coming soon, Leo.
Yeah, Plants vs. Zombies 2. Looks good. Time travel.
Yeah.
Looks fun. Yeah. All right, that's enough of that. You're making me sick. It's like the Easter Bunny threw up all over Twit. I'm trying to find good things. AirDrop.
Yep.
Don't have to connect it anymore. I can just drag and drop files from
and
me
Apple
to
stick.
You.
Don't have to bump.
No more bumping.
Yep.
The weather app is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, they led with the weather app. Who uses the generic weather app? Isn't everybody upgrading like Weather HD, which
they
is
they only
beautiful
show and- the apps that were finished on,
right.
on the stage.
And they gave that one a lot more attention than it deserved. Camera's nice, the Instagramming of camera.
It's fast.
It's fast. It's big.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, still, Android cameras in general, sluggish, buggy, not great.
Microsoft does a great job with the cameras, and it's nice to see Apple really accelerate it.
Spectacular camera. It's arguably the best camera out there right now for a phone. But, you know, they got square aspect ratios. They've got filters.
I'm so happy about that, Leo, because every second email I got was, we have added filters to our app. It was like a to-do app.
No more
filters to it.
No more. No more filters. It's an easy thing to do. Siri, this is something that arguably Apple needed to do some catch-up on.
Yeah. Well, they arguably still have to do some catch-up on.
They didn't go that far.
They didn't do that much at all.
No. They new voices, so you have a few new voices, a new interface. It ties in now to a few more services. But we discussed this on Mac Week. They're still bound to their Nuance deal. They don't have the same freedom that Google has.
Well, to be honest, like, do you care that much about Siri?
I use it all the time.
Really?
I would care
everything.
If it were better.
Right.
I'm too lazy to type now.
Don't you use your voice on your Android device?
Not that often.
Oh, I dictate all the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. And I like the Android device for that. Yeah. And I use Google Now. And, you know, I've set it up so that I can just stroke up on my phone and Google, you know, speech search launches. And I mean, I think that the speech is important on mobile, especially because those keyboards are tiny.
And
you have little pointy girl fingers.
I do.
Big fat sausage fingers.
What keyboard do you use on?
I use SwiftKey.
Yeah.
That's the number one seller. But swipe's good, too. Google Now has a keyboard, which is kind of fun.
Which is hilarious. they're putting their own keyboard
their own
in the store.
Keyboards on the Google Play Store.
As we move to wearables and stuff like that, these like Siri and Google Now are going to be the interfaces that get projected onto those. So,
and I feel like Apple is just not advancing Siri as fast as we hoped it would. It's pleasant.
It's affable.
It's not adorkable yet. Messages still broken.
But it bounces now.
It bounces.
Oh, the bouncing. Well, Renee put up a really good article that iOS 7 is actually the most skeuomorphic, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because it's so physical. And even though it's flat and it doesn't look skeuomorphic, it acts skeuomorphic.
There's
and
no textures, but the entire OS is an object.
Bubbles. It's alive.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing to go for in a phone.
It's what
it's
I want
to personality.
See. No, absolutely. And it took a year after the App Store launched. Like, the first year of App Store was UIKit apps. So they just used the default Apple everything. And then we got amazing applications. And when developers play with this, you know, 3 months, 4 months, 8 months, a year from now, I think all the tools Apple gave them will get a bunch of really interesting applications again.
You know, I think it looks like an app designed by an interface designed by Nicki Minaj. In fact, I think I see Johnny Ive's influence here.
The visual design is sorely lacking.
Yeah.
If you had an Apple T-shirt and the Apple went shoulder to shoulder.
I'm rooting for them because I think competition is great in the cell phone space. I don't want to see Samsung dominate. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I like HTC. I want to see these plucky, you know, struggling companies come forward with some new stuff that's exciting. I'd love to see Apple. I don't want to see Apple dominate, but I'd love to see it be as strong as it should be.
Absolutely. I want all the phone platforms to
They should
do
all
great.
Be strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we win.
We that's good for us.
Exactly. I want these companies. I hate when people fight over the phones, like what atoms you have in your pocket. I want these companies to be fighting over us.
Right.
As much as possible.
Better. I like that. Fighting to win their customers. Sometimes you don't get the feeling that Apple cares that much.
I want to be like tempted to change phones every 3 to 6 months. Like really sorely tempted.
Oh, I am. I do.
I was going to say that's my life.
I do.
It's not easy.
I do. So no one company should dominate.
No.
Certainly, it would be a bad world for us all if Samsung were to be the source of all innovation. Just
Absolutely.
Look at the Galaxy S4 and what a hodgepodge that is.
I do like that they're like the crazy uncle who'll throw everything against
the
wall.
They
because
are.
Maybe someone will take that idea and make it coherent. So I'm glad they're in the market, but I'm not buying the phone.
My favorite thing about the S4 is everybody with the S3 complained that there were too many features and they couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
So
they're
like, oh, we're going to do some more.
Well, you know,
screw it punished you for that.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't like it, huh? Well, watch this. You'd think that was bad.
You know, some people love them, and then great, they can buy those. And, you know, I'm going to get the HTC next because I like that a lot better, and we have choice, and I love
that. It's not perfect either.
Yeah.
There's no perfect phone. In fact, I've been going back and forth about whether I should root the S4 and just go
I'm trying to
Google.
Decide between the HTC Sense version and the with Google version.
Get the one with Sense because you can always put the Google.
Yes.
You can always planify it, but you can't go the other way.
No, that's true.
And you want Sense. There's, like, the camera app, the gallery app, right, Dieter? It's good.
It's pretty good. The gallery app's got some bugs that drive me crazy.
Well, some of the features just don't work.
Yeah.
And this is the same problem with the S4. They have all these photo features that don't do anything. So,
I mean, if I were buying an Android phone, I'd probably wait for the with Google and get the S4 with Google.
I'm waiting to see what the Moto X. What do you know about the Moto X?
I mean, I know what's leaked and that it's not going to, you know, it's not going to change the world.
It's not going to be a flexible screen with 8,000 megapixels.
There's the Moto X, the big important one, and then I think there's another one a little bit sooner. And that sooner one's going to be whatever.
It'll be a Nexus, but it won't be anything
I want
special.
My Google Now Plus phone. That'll be one of my next phones.
You mean like Facebook?
Google Now and Google Plus will be the main interface
like Facebook
of the phone.
Home.
Yeah. And those Google Tiles will just, I'll turn it on, I'll have all my, you know, cards just waiting for me.
I related this anecdote before, but when we were at Google I.O., I walked up to Bradley Horowitz, who runs Google Plus, and said, nice job, it was a good speech, really enjoyed it, I'm excited by what you guys are doing, but you know what I'd love to see? A Facebook Home, but for Google Plus.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, well, how about something even better?
Yeah.
And so
there's been a lot of nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
There's a lot of...
Yeah.
Probably has to do with balloons over New Zealand.
Yeah.
Balloon phone. Loon phone, that's what I want now.
I
could have done with some loons over Moscone this weekend. That would have been nice.
You know, if they could get the antenna for that balloon internet into a phone and have it work.
Ooh.
Like the Korean phones with the TV antennas.
Happy. Yeah.
I mean, they probably could.
I had, you know, giant extendable antennas on cell phones back in the day. I'd do it again.
You remember that?
Yeah.
You're that old?
Yeah.
I didn't think you would. Anything else to say about WWDC? No, I think we covered it.
Most people thought it was the best dub in a long time.
Really?
Yeah, all the people who were there, the developers...
Well, that's encouraging.
The designers had some trouble with it, but they're making their own apps anyway. But the people there almost to a one said that it was their best dub ever.
And I should point out that the way Apple does this is the public and press are invited to the keynote and then thrown out.
Yes.
And everything that happens thereafter is completely NDA'd.
Yes.
Anybody who was there can't talk.
Yes.
So you might get dribs and drabs and stuff. I guess now the sessions, if you're a developer, but you have the same restrictions. You can't talk about it. So we don't really kind of know, but it's good to know that the developers were excited by what they saw.
And
we don't know what it was.
Twitter and conversations and everything was incredibly positive.
That's great.
Yeah, everyone left really happy.
Big question that they never addressed was the problem, and developers would care about this a lot with cloud services, particularly Cloud Sync.
That wasn't discussed publicly.
Pardon me?
That was not discussed publicly.
But they did talk about that in private. Maybe.
I can't say anything. I believe Apple didn't leave anything unaddressed.
I just know what Renee tells me.
I actually have heard that from some developers that not only did they address it, but they kind of did a mea culpa. Yeah, we screwed up Cloud Sync. We know it's broken. They don't even use it.
Yeah, but how many times do they get to do that? Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the, you know.
They didn't change names this time, at least.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, we'll watch with interest. And, you know, I'll buy all their crap anyway. I don't care.
I want to believe.
All right, we're going to talk about the NSA. I think Steve Gibson on Wednesday, he had an excellent Security Now. When he started, he said, Leo, I think I figured out what's going on. And I don't know. I said, I was very skeptical because I thought, well, nobody can talk about it because you're enjoined by the Patriot Act that if you will get a national security letter, you can't say anything. So I think we don't know. He said, well, listen. And at the end of it, I thought he makes a good case. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. And now that there is more and more going on, there's some more stories coming out. Declan McCullough had a very scary story today on CNET. We'll talk about that in just a second. Before we do, though, let's get one more ad in here so that I can buy all that Apple crap. This is Go to My PC from Citrix. Go to My PC is, you know, I got to say, I use it all the time. Citrix is really starting to put together an array of apps for business that are just with Go to Meeting, Go to My PC, Podio, ShareFile. I keep saying to them, guys, you got to make a suite. This is all great stuff. Go to My PC means you can leave the office. Now, you may say, well, what do you mean? All right, before you leave, put Go to My PC on Mac or PC, and now wherever you are, at home, at the pool with the kids, you can access your office computer, and even from an iPhone, an Android phone, an iPad, accessing Windows 8 on an iPad is kind of mind-blowing. It's fast. It works well. It is the ultimate remote access. Totally secure. It uses SSL. So your transactions are completely encrypted. In fact, I know a lot of people use Go to My PC so that they can use their iPad at an open access spot, say at an internet cafe, and feel like they're secure, which they are, because the traffic is completely encrypted going right back to the office. It's very easy to use. You can run any program. You can access any network resource. You can send and receive email. Even if you don't have an app on your phone, you can run that app via GoToMyPC on your computer at work. It's very easy to try. In fact, I've got a good deal for you. 30 days free. No, just go to GoToMyPC.com. The apps are always free. Click the Try It Free. Do this on your office computer. Click the Try It Free button. Enter the promo code TWIT and then install it on your office computer. You won't need the IT guy to come over. You don't need to punch a hole in a firewall. It uses NAT traversal. So it's it works perfectly well in every environment. It is a great solution. Go to my PC. Citrix invented remote access. They actually licensed it back to Microsoft. They are the kings of this. And for many years now, Go to my PC has been the simplest, easiest, and best way to access your computer, Windows or Mac. Go to mypc.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free. This is interesting. We're seeing more and more about the NSA, about PRISM. We talked about it a lot about it last week. According to Declan McCullough, the NSA disclosed in a secret Capitol Hill briefing that they have many, many people at the NSA who can listen into any phone call without a warrant. The analyst at the NSA just says, yeah, I want to hear that. If the NSA wants to, writes Declan, if the NSA wants to listen to the phone, an analyst's decision is sufficient without any other legal authorization required. This is revealed by a congressman who serves on the House Judiciary Committee. It's worse than we thought, frankly. The evidence is strong that they are collecting all electronic transmissions inside and out of the U.S. The NSA is not supposed to listen in to calls that are just U.S. to U.S. Apparently, they do, and they can. Emails, instant messages, text messages, phone calls, everything you do on the Internet. And Steve was trying to reconcile the notion that these companies like Google and Facebook just blanket denial. No, they don't have access to our servers. With what people like Edward Snowden and now others are saying, yeah, we can see everything. We can watch people type. Steve supposes, and I think he's probably right, given in order to understand this, you have to understand a little bit about how the Internet works. And I think that's probably why members of Congress haven't really sussed to this yet. They're starting to. All companies, Google, Facebook, and just like you, have to connect to the Internet. They may have multiple points of connection. They may have multiple Internet service providers, but they have Internet service providers. These big Internet service providers are most likely the ones who are being wiretapped right at the connection to Google. So Google doesn't know or has no way of monitoring this. It's after Google, but really before the public Internet. It's exactly what the NSA was doing at AT&T. They were wiretapping AT&T so that WorldNet users, ISP users for WorldNet, were all the traffic into and out of their computers was monitored by the NSA. So now, and it's also clear with the NSA building a giant facility in Utah capable of storing 5 zettabytes of data that they are, in fact, storing all this stuff. And what's become clear is they're not necessarily sifting through it or listening at any given time, but they're storing it. And should a time come that they wanted to find out what is that Rene Ritchie doing when he visits the United States, they can go through it. Steve's argument was absolutely compelling to me. And I think he even says, look, that's why they named it PRISM. What does a PRISM do? It splits light.
Right. Yeah.
They're splitting the fiber optic cables.
You don't even have to assume that they're doing it, you know, really close to these big companies. Like, even if it's like the most innocent, innocuous situation where they're just doing it on the pipes going out of the country.
Maybe May East to May West or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Even in that case, it's still, they're still catching so much stuff that's just internal to the U.S.
And I asked Steve, why would they do it so close to Google? He said, well, because then they can do a subpoena. So let's say they see some traffic that's suspicious. They could say, well, on February 13th, between the hours of this and this, we saw this traffic from this IP address. Who was that? Now Google now has to respond to this national security letter, and they now have identified it exactly. So there's a reason to say, oh, well, we know where this came from exactly. I suppose you could do that at any point on the backbone. Here's why I find it disturbing. We've seen time and time again the U.S. government using any pretext. Once they've got somebody they want to arrest, let's say they find something on Renee. Now they can go back and say, well, let's find more stuff. And the laws are so loosely written. I'll give you a good example. This is how they went after Aaron Schwartz. It is a federal crime to violate a website's term of service. That's a felony. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you do it all the time. If you've ever made up a name on Facebook, you violated their terms of service. All those kids, 13 years old and under, who are Facebook members, guess what? You've committed a federal crime. Now all they have to do, they want to get you, Dieter. Let's say, let's go back and see what that Dieter's been up to. And now they can. There's so many, you know, stupid crimes they could get you. They add that to the list.
Right.
And I just don't think we can trust the government to do this responsibly. Dianne Feinstein, apparently the chairman of the committee, knows about this. Our senator here from California, she's not been very forthcoming on this.
Well, we've got problems multiplied on top of problems. So whatever the actual surveillance is a problem. But then the fact that keeping what that surveillance is a secret multiplies it.
Because there's no conversation.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we not only do not know what they're doing, but the fact that we don't know is making it worse.
Dianne Feinstein, who heads the Senate Intelligence Committee, acknowledged the agency's analysts have the ability to access the content of a call. I mean, it's clear now, mm-hmm. without warrant, that the NSA and other federal agencies can listen to any call. And all it requires is some low-level analyst to say, and by the way, there are thousands of them, I'd like to hear this one. You don't think they're listening in to all sorts of traffic, just for fun?
I mean, if it's like this straightforward, like the only thing that's protecting us is obscurity, I guess?
The sheer volumes of data?
Well, that's what doesn't protect us, because now, and that's the, I guess that's kind of to me the point, is they store it all.
Yeah.
And then they just wait until they want to get somebody. I think what you're going to see, and Declan backpedaled a little bit, although I don't think materially, is you're going to see a lot of threats coming out of the federal government. You know, if you get a national security letter, you can't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Facebook, remember, asked for the right to say how many of the government requests were NSLs. And Google's been doing this for a while, as mushed in with all the other data. The feds are going to fight this.
Did you see the flap, though, that happened? Because it's all, so Facebook published it first, and all of the requests got aggregated together in one giant lump.
Local law enforcement, federal law enforcement, NSA, doesn't matter.
Right.
It's all the same.
But they did finally include FISA. Then Microsoft came in and said, yeah, well, here's ours too. And then Google said, well, this is stupid. This doesn't help anybody because we can't figure out how many are actually FISA. We already do everything else, so we're not taking part. And then Twitter sided with Google. So now we've got all these companies yelling at the government to let them say stuff, but now they're taking different tactics to do it.
Google said it's a step back for users. I don't think that's true. The point is these numbers. The Google Transparency Report, I commend them for doing it. But we aren't knowing the most important thing, which is what the NSA is up to.
I think All Things D did tried to do the math, because there was a previous transparency report from Microsoft. But you've got to it's for the whole year, so you got to split it in half. And it's still, we still just don't know.
All right. I guess it's just a depressing subject. People are, you know, the news cycle is going to move on in a moment, and we'll start talking about something else. But I just think this is so important. I would go to the EFF page, EFF.org, where they call for action, and they give you ways to act. Stop mass surveillance. Tell Congress. You should. We said this last week. It's even more urgent now. You should tell your member of Congress this is not okay. They will help you. You just enter your zip code. It'll tell you who to write to. Postal service is good. Mail it or call them. They need to identify that you're actually a constituent before they'll take it seriously. And if millions of people call Congress, I think they will do something about this.
Maybe they'll at least show up to their meetings.
Yeah, they all went home early. Thanks.
Yeah.
What's interesting is people internationally, especially people in Europe and people in other countries who's depends so much on the U.S. for internet connectivity, internet services.
Well, they're furious.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, my data is being monitored. I'm Canadian. I don't even have a say in this discussion.
Yeah, the there's some talk about getting Neelie Kroes, the EU's privacy protector. She's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she's been very aggressive against pitbulls. Google. Yeah, they're pit bulls. And get her involved. But it's going to hurt us. You know, the Finnish prime minister said this is a violation of Finnish law.
Absolutely. And we joke, like, I don't know if we joke, but we make these flip comments about the era of privacy is dead, and we joke about Google, you know, knowing everything that we do. But when you see it made manifest on such a massive scale, I think that's what brings home just how disturbing this new era really allows people to be.
What is it? You live in Montreal. What is the Canadian reaction to this stuff?
I mean, the only time Canadians ever took to the streets when they charged us too much for internet data. We're remarkably self-interested people, but I think that, you know, humans in general, we sacrifice long-term good for short-term gain, and we don't understand the impact this is going to have going forward in the future. And I think that we should be paying more attention to this.
It scares me, and I don't want to be sensationalistic about it. But we already, you know, to some degree, have suspended habeas corpus. Mm-hmm. It is all this because we're so scared of terrorism,
absolutely,
and I understand the fear. But we've suspended habeas corpus. We have, which is a, you know, long, I mean, going back to the Magna freaking Carta, is a long-held tenet of common law. We've started warrantless wiretapping. It feels to me we are moving. That's why I thought 1984 would be a good,
absolutely,
book to recommend for Audible.com.
V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
The trial.
Yeah.
Remember.
And we do it under the cloud of secrecy, and we do it under the cloud of protection. We do it in all these ways that are invisible, and it just erodes. It erodes one step at a time until you no longer remember what you had.
Well, so I still go back to, like, whatever compromises we're making between our own privacy and security, like, we should have that conversation and decide what we want them to be. Mm-hmm. But we're not even having that conversation.
No, we're not allowed.
We don't know what the compromises are in the first place.
We've apparently given them carte blanche.
Which is great.
It's that old statement, this is how freedom ends.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's sad. I guess we're all in agreement. I don't know what to say except write your member of Congress, and fight, because
make it unacceptable.
It's not going to end well. It's not.
And these things happen. I mean, like, historically, states go from being liberal to being, you know, incredibly fascist and back and forth. And you just have to make sure that you encounter that wave and split it as fast as you can.
Right. And it makes me nervous for people like Steve. I just worry that, When do you step over the line? When do they start hounding you?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You got to become a comedian because they can get away with saying it.
It's just a joke, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom Merritt is keeping an eye on things. We do TNT every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. It's your daily dose of tech news. If you like Twit, you'll find out what those stories are each and every day. Let's see what's coming up in the week ahead, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Starting on Monday, June 17th, Bloomberg's Next Big Thing Summit kicks off. Also, some Wikipedia users will start to see the visual editor. And Aereo is set to come to Atlanta for pre-registered users only. Tuesday, June 18th, Huawei is hosting a beauty event in London. And O'Reilly kicks off Velocity in Santa Clara, California. Wednesday, June 19th, it's GigaOhm Structure. Thursday, June 20th, Oracle announces their quarterly earnings, and Samsung unveils new Android and Windows devices, apparently, at Samsung Premier in London. Friday, June 21st, the AT&T folks launch the Galaxy S4 Active. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you.
I've been wondering, Dieter, if we should cover that Samsung event. Do you think that's going to be anything more than just a new Ative?
Well, I thought it was going to be the S4 Zoom, but thou...
That's the camera.
The camera.
But they've said everything there is to say about it.
Yeah, but I mean, they'll trot that out.
They'll trot it out. And that's exactly why we decided not. It's during Windows Weekly. We'll be keeping an eye on it.
Yeah.
But they've already said everything about this. It's a camera. And it's kind of like 412. It's an old version of Android. It's a slow processor. It's not that exciting.
And if they had anything amazing on the Ative line, they should have done it at Computex.
Right.
Right.
So nothing to
I'm
see.
I'm hoping it's kind of.
I always try to judge these ahead of time because then they're going to announce, yes, we've done it. I don't know what.
Galaxy
S5. You know, we heard you. We decided we want to make it look like an Easter egg, too.
No more plastic.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Dieter, it's been great having you. Dieter Bohn is a senior editor at The Verge. You do a podcast there, too.
Yeah, we do The Verge Mobile Show.
The Verge Mobile Show. Is it weekly?
Yeah.
I hear it's very good.
Mostly weekly.
I don't have time for podcasts. I hear it's excellent, though. It's nice to have you, Dieter. Thank you.
It's been good.
Come up again, please.
I will.
We want to thank Renee Ritchie for being here as well from iMore.com, Crackberry.com, Android.
Android Central. Windows Phone Central.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
When are you going home?
I'm going home on the red eye tonight.
Oh, well, thank you for staying a little extra.
Tomorrow morning, we're launching Talk Mobile Apps, and you were kind enough to do a segment with us, and that'll be up on Wednesday.
Good.
Yeah.
Wednesday, and Wednesday. What's the website?
It's
going to
be
that?
Up all week. It's going to be talkmobile2013.com.
Talkmobile2013.com.
All about apps.
Cool. Tweet me, and I'll tweet it out to the world.
Absolutely.
Thank we you. Did, by the way, and I'm meaning to tweet Jason Silva's interview on triangulation this week. Boy, is he, do you know who that is? He's a character. YouTube.com/shotsofawe. And it's worth seeing that triangulation if you didn't see that. It's at twit.tv/TRI. A very interesting guy who is very bullish about the future. So if all this NSA stuff has brought you down, watch a little shot of awe and you'll feel much
You have to love the future,
better.
Leo.
The future's bright. Mm-hmm. It's just these intervals in between where the bad guys, sometimes they get a little ahead.
If we humans don't mess it up.
Humans, we're going to win in the long run. Put your faith in humans.
Yes.
Gene Hackman will save us.
Did you see Man of Steel yet?
Not yet. I'm holding
I saw it.
Off.
It's interesting.
Yes.
It's long.
Yes. It's not my Superman, but it's a
Superman. It turns into Transformers at the end.
Yes.
But other than that, if you cut that part off, it's great. You will like it.
I've seen it.
Oh, you saw it?
Yes. I have
it's
reservations.
Not your Superman?
I have reservations about the ending.
Yeah, it just goes on and on. Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, well, we can talk about it after.
Oh, yes. No spoilers. Yeah. Although he's 33 years old, he comes out like this.
Yes.
There's a little bit of Christian iconography
Not
going on.
Not as much
there.
As Superman Returns, but quite a bit.
Quite a bit. I guess Superman has always been a godlike figure. Yeah. There is that one thing where the bad guy says, "We are evolution. Evolution always wins in the end." And then he punches him in the nose.
Okay, my favorite part, and this is my favorite part, is the bad guy messages the world on television. He's coming in through RSS.
On a Nokia phone.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Nokia phone. Yes.
No.
He's taken over the RSS.
That is the funniest thing. They got all the TV sets saying, "We are, you're not alone," and all the radios and everything. And then it's on the Nokia, Windows Nokia, Lumia 928.
Which is how you know it's a fantasy, because everyone has Nokia phones.
Everyone does. Wow. Everyone has Nokia phones. And it says, and she says, she's coming in on RSS.
Yeah.
Wow. He really is powerful.
Thank God Google protected us.
He brought Google Reader back.
Yes.
That's power.
You would think General Zod could figure out Pub Sub Hub Hub.
Michael Shannon, great.
Yes.
Very good at it.
Yes.
You know, really wonderful. And that's a tough role.
Yeah.
General Zod.
Yeah, look at who was playing it last time.
Exactly.
Terrence Stamp,
the king of bad guys.
Yeah.
All right, enough of that. This isn't the film show. What
this
are you
weekend,
talking
Man of Steel.
I saw it last night. You know what I saw it in? Do they have this in Canada? D-Box?
No.
So stupid. It's a seat that moves.
Yeah, we have those. We call it Super ATV or something.
So you're watching and the seat's going like this.
Yes. And vibrating.
I didn't think you could come up with something worse than 3D.
Yeah.
But they have.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't see it. They don't have, in Petaluma, it's not allowed. You can't mix 3D and D-Box because you'd vomit.
I went to 2D. I'm only ever going to 2D.
2D, that's it. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Twit on Sunday afternoons right after the Tech Guy, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Oh, Chad's giving me a little hint. He's dropping a little hint. I wonder what it could be. Oh, our E3 coverage is on the Twit specials. Episode 162, go to twit.tv/specials. Lamar Wilson and Chad and Snubs was down there with you, and they covered the E3 in such a beautiful way.
They were awesome. I watched some of it.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. What was your favorite game, Chad? What did you get excited about anything?
Oh, my gosh. I would have to say people freaked out over Kingdom Hearts. I mean.
Oh, that's going to be a good one. That's the gangster game, right?
No.
No?
That's the Disney game.
Disney?
Gangster Disney.
Close.
All right. And iJustine makes a guest appearance and all that. Mm-hmm. I really want to thank Trey Ratcliffe from StuckInCustoms.com for joining us. Russ Pitts, my old friend from Tech TV, who is now the guy in charge of Polygon.com, for joining us earlier in the show. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. Another Twit
is
in the can. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Now, the process of tripling your internet speed is not very difficult at all. The first thing you have to do is grab your
internet cable
and find the end.
He looks respectable, and he's on the internet. I trust
him. Pick one end.
He's going to tape batteries to his cable.
The battery about 3 inches from the end in either direction.
This is so
it's
infinite possibility.
It's important to use electrical tape because it conducts electricity. Here's the first battery. after you have the first battery
on. So this is
on,
a joke, right?
You need to find the second end of the cable.
No, no, I'm sure it works.
Sure
we should try
it. You have the battery facing
he does a speed test at the end.
Same direction towards the end. So, for example, the positive
to
side
to most people, this looks credible.
The end of this side of the cable. Yeah. So the positive side must be facing the end of this cable side.
You gotta
so we're
sure
going to do the same thing
direction.
Using the electrical tape. Now you have a cable with one battery on each end. It may look strange, but I'm going to explain it shortly. If you have two more batteries, you could add them further down the line.
This is no different than baseball players wearing magic magnetic ropes around their neck.
On this side.